Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Friday Night SmackDown on Fox.
Well, Brandon, sometimes a crowd can make a show, and sometimes a crowd enhances a good show and makes it great. I've been looking forward to and talking on podcasts all week about how I think this crowd is going to be one of the stories of the weekend, and I think it'll be even more the case for Backlash. This was a good warm-up and a window into just what it felt like an old-school wrestling crowd from the, like, late 70s into the 80s. I know people who grew up in the Monday Night War would say it kind of resembled that, minus all the fan signs. But that was a fun atmosphere, start to finish. I think WWE booked it well, bookending the show with wrestlers who are going to get a great reaction. But everybody did, including, like, Cody. What is that? Is that for you one of the story of the show so far?
Yeah, I think it's definitely the story of the show. I mean, it was a really, really cool atmosphere from the get-go. I mean, the intro especially was excellent. I loved the way that they brought the drone in from the outside to kind of show you the late-arriving crowd, which Michael Cole mentioned and is a trope that WWE often goes to when there are visible empty seats. But it felt like it was justified because you could see how many people were outside, and you got a feel for, you know, people were filing in and they were really excited, and the people that were already in the building in their seats were loud and ready to go. And it was just a really cool departure from how they typically open their shows. It reminded me a lot a couple of seasons ago, Hard Knocks on HBO, the NFL Films look at the training camp of various NFL teams. A couple of seasons ago, they focused on the Dallas Cowboys, and there was a really incredible establishing shot at the beginning of the series of a drone going through an open tour of Jerry's World, because of course their practice facility is incredible and state of the art, and it was a really neat look. And this was filmed very, very similarly. It almost makes me wonder if it was used in part as an inspiration, just because of the fluidity of it and the way that they creatively move from, you know, the outside to the inside and kind of ducked into concessions and down into the open tunnel. It was just really, really neat. That was a standout for me, as well as just, you know, the crowd reactions throughout the show. I mean, they were hot start to finish. They clearly are very, very interested in the product, and WWE was very much, very much willing to openly boast about their recent international success, which makes a lot of sense, both because, you know, they have been very successful, and also because their competition, AEW, is in the midst of one of the most impressive sales runs for ticketing in a long, long time. So it made a lot of sense, and I thought it came off really well.
Yeah. I mean, Tony Khan is very happy these days with 60,000. He announced 60,000 tickets sold for that show. He called it. He said this is one of the greatest success stories in wrestling history. And I get why he says that. Maybe he's not the one to be saying it, but it is a big moment for AEW. I mean, I am impressed, and they should be proud. And it shows there's this market out there, and I think that market is going to be. I think Wembley Stadium is going to be wild. It's an outdoor stadium. It's not kind of the same vibe that San Juan had tonight and will tomorrow night. It'll be different. You know, it'll be better in certain ways because of the magnitude of it. But the intimacy and that just on top of you heat that the heels felt is special when you get in more of a hockey arena setting. And boy, were they in the midst of fans who were just enthusiastic about everything and reacting the way. You know, you'd want them to react to everything. I mean, it's just, you know, when people listen to the 5 years ago and 10 years ago flashbacks we put up on the Wade Keller Post Show and podcast feeds, you know, we're talking a lot about the crowds pushing back against what Vince McMahon was serving them. You know, it's like, you will eat what we feed you. Mm-hmm. Or trying to rationalize, hey, it's good, we're just getting a reaction. And that's all that counts. And it's like BS. Obviously, that's a consolation prize to getting the reaction you're actually aiming for. Mm-hmm. But they always put that out there. And some people in WWE, I think, even bought the line of BS, because I had people with a straight face tell me that, and I'd, you know, push back. This is completely different. Like, WWE, and to a degree, AEW, but to a lesser degree, shockingly, have the crowd in the palm of their hands. Like, they are in sync with them. This Puerto Rico crowd, I mean, you know, Vince McMahon would always say, you know, WWE is WWF back in the day, is part of Americana. You know, it's like he really wanted WWF to be something other than pro wrestling, or, you know, he could have redefined pro wrestling, but he just decided to call it something different, which is sports entertainment. But these are the moments he wanted, which is that it translates so well internationally. Pro wrestling does. And for him to not only make WWE part of Americana, which it has become, I mean, I think newer fans take for granted or don't even understand, like, how scarce it was that anything having to do with pro wrestling, including in particular WWF, would be mentioned in the mainstream media. And the high percentage of times that it was with a judgmental snicker. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't happen. I mean, it still happens a little bit, but, like, it's just accepted now as a big part of it's this American export. And that's what's happening in Wembley Stadium. It's happened to a lesser degree in Japan. And to a degree, you see it with super enthusiastic crowd in Saudi Arabia. In Puerto Rico, they don't go too much. It's part of the United States, but it's not part of the contiguous 50 states, Spanish. You know, there's all kinds of reasons that make this different and special for Vince McMahon and for, you know, who's seen the journey that he's been on with WWE. And they've been there before. It's been a long time. But when you can bring this product there, and they're not just sitting around waiting for Bad Bunny. They're into everything. And, I mean, it's just – and you could even see in the faces of the wrestlers, like, this is – fun. A lesser example, but I pointed out because I think it's fair. TNA, when they went to the UK, they got like they drew bigger crowds than they did in the United States. It was very AEW like in that sense, where the demand for tickets and the crowd enthusiasm for the product was actually higher in the UK than it was in the United States in any market. So yeah, I mean, I just have so much to say about it, but it's just it's fun seeing something that's been such a part of my life for decades and decades just show up in a market that isn't a main market for them, and to have, you know, just have the wrestlers enjoy themselves and be elevated by the atmosphere and the fact that everyone in that crowd is just buying into their characters and enthusiastic about the stories and the personalities involved.
Yeah, and it helps that we're in the era that we're in now, in the age of streaming, in the sense that WWE is no longer relying on traditional pay-per-view to sell these events. Because, you know, years ago, during the Attitude Era and post-Attitude Era, there was a lot of discussion about the idea of bringing a large-scale WWE event overseas, and it felt like it was a pipe dream. It wasn't going to happen, save for the occasional, you know, yearly episode of Raw and SmackDown that they would bring to the UK, just because of the time difference, of the issue of airing a pay-per-view in the middle of the afternoon, or doing something like, you know, trying to finagle a way to make the pay-per-view air live in the U.S. in the evening and have to run the show, you know, late in the night overseas. And it never felt like it could quite work. And in the era of WWE Network and now Peacock, they have a lot more freedom to do this type of thing, where it's not make or break necessarily to lose a monthly pay-per-view, because you don't have people spending $50 on it. So it's not as big of a deal to have a show that you air at, you know, 12 noon or 1 in the afternoon or 3 in the afternoon. Whereas before, it was a very strict, you know, this is 8 o'clock on Sunday. And we've seen that shift a lot in recent years, not just with timing, but also with playing with pay-per-views being on Saturdays, WWE actually preferring the Saturday route now, it you know, more or less seems like. And it's worked, and it will continue to work. I do think it's worth noting, I saw a few people talking about, you know, the idea that because Puerto Rico, using Puerto Rico tonight as an advantage, was such a rabid audience, that they are in some ways – you know, international audiences are somehow better than American audiences going forward. And I think you can make that argument in a vacuum on a show-by-show basis. But I think what you brought up is the key point here, is part of the reason there's so much rabid excitement for these shows is because of how rarely they get them. AEW wouldn't be able to go to Wembley 4, 5, 6 times a year and sell it out or sell 60-plus thousand tickets. It's a specialty thing, and it's the same thing here. I'm sure WWE could go to Puerto Rico multiple times a year and draw very big crowds, but eventually the reactions like this will wear down.
Absolutely. But even when you – whenever you bring your show on the road, if you draw well, it's a win, even if there will be diminishing returns. And AEW's found that out going to markets over and over. You know, yeah. Generally the crowds are down, not up, the more they go. And that's natural. But when you have a crowd that turns out and then there is into the product, as this crowd was, it bodes well for the future of drawing big crowds and it not just being a one-off. And yeah, so... this is fun. Okay, well, let's pause and introduce ourselves and get into the actual more specific content of the show. Evaluate that. We've got a lot of people who have called and are waiting and emailed also. So we want to incorporate them into the show because on this format, it's great. We get to hear from our listeners who have also just watched the show, bringing their perspective and their questions into the podcast conversation here. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Friday, May 5th, 2023. I'm Wade Keller, the host of the program, the editor, publisher, and founder of the Pro Wrestling Torch Weekly Newsletter and the website pwtorch.com, and the host of the free Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcasts and post shows, and also several VIP-exclusive shows, including The Fix with Todd Martin. Todd and I recorded a day late this week, but that is available now for VIP members, so check that out. We lead with WWE and get into Todd's excellent critique of the draft, and then reviews of SmackDown and Raw, and a Backlash preview. And then we move on to New Japan and NXT and AEW and UFC and more. So go VIP if you're not a VIP member, if you want to hear everything that I'm part of during the week and all the contributions from the great team who put out podcasts and articles for our VIP members. The place to go to find out more information is pwtorch.com/goVIP. pwtorch.com/goVIP. You can sign up to our main website with credit card, debit card, or PayPal. You can also support us through Patreon and get a lot of VIP benefits through that. Or you can actually get our VIP podcast directly through your Apple account on your iPhone. It's all explained at pwtorch.com/goVIP. The other voice you've heard so far is Brandon LeClaire. He is a PW Torch contributor, a longtime contributor, who will be covering Backlash tomorrow night alongside me at pwtorch.com. We'll each have separate reports detailing the happenings as the show progresses. You can get two perspectives on the show and two sets of details as the show progresses. Brandon, this should be a lot more relaxing than the Royal Rumble and a lot less exhausting than the double night of WrestleMania, but we'll have the exhilaration of that crowd, I think, even though they're there back-to-back nights, keeping us energized. I enjoy wrestling so much more and can be so much more forgiving of aspects of it where you're kind of like, that didn't go well, or why did they do that, when you just have a crowd as enthusiastic as tonight?
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. It reminded me, as we get going here, having SmackDown tonight in Puerto Rico reminded me a lot of like the go-home shows for WrestleMania, where in the last couple of years they've had them in the host city, where you kind of feel the building anticipation for that crowd because a lot of them will probably be there tomorrow night. WWE sold combo packages, so a lot of the SmackDown ticket holders are also Backlash ticket holders. So they get a little taste of what's to come tomorrow, and it makes them, I think, more excited and more lively. I like that format, even outside of, you know, when they do it in the big cities for like the big four shows. I really like doubling up the pay-per-view and go-home SmackDown.
One thing that stood out, too, you mentioned the drone, and I mentioned that in my report at pwtorch.com tonight, that's the kind of thing I wanted Tony Khan and his team to have a vision for, and to kind of shake things up and not just do a more traditional stage left, ring entrance, ring in the middle, camera pointed at it, and showing the outside of the arena and that atmosphere makes me feel like I'm there, and it distinguishes it from what can be sort of just sort of a carbon copy aspect to how WWE looks week after week after week, same with AEW. And when you're in a unique venue like that, a unique setting. It's the way that they shot it was really cool. And then the other thing is they didn't have the traditional entrance stage. So they're coming out through just the concourse tunnel like hockey players do for an NHL game. But they did a good job with it, and it made me kind of think, you know, you could actually – if wrestling was red hot where every arena was selling out, but they had to block off 20% of the seats because of the staging, you could have a pretty creative ring entrance that didn't involve something as massive as WWE's stage. I mean, it would be a step down, but that the way that they lit up the tunnel – with a projecting or LED board or I'm not even quite sure what the technology was, but with the logos as they walked out and extended it out of the hallway down the concourse a bit without blocking the vision of the fans, I thought it was a really good solution for being in a venue that probably would have supported the stage, but I just don't think they could have got – they just couldn't get the stage there cheaply and easily, so they decided to go with a different look. I'm curious if it's the same thing for the pay-per-view or if they do a more traditional setup for that event.
Yeah, I assume they'll keep it the same. I mean, it's a minimal turnover, and you would think that if anything, it would be more important to them to have more seats available for the pay-per-view rather than SmackDown. So I can't imagine them subtracting seats from the setup for tomorrow. But I thought it worked. I mean, they've played around with this with recent stadium shows, opting for the small stage over the big stage in the stadiums for Royal Rumble and SummerSlam. And I think largely it works okay. I mean, it's the curved ramp kind of helps to set it apart from the standard walkway. I saw a few people on Twitter note, and I sort of agree with the idea that the current WWE stage is so huge that it almost helps the wrestler's presentation in a way to come out through a smaller stage because it makes them feel larger. And the fact that they're just a little bit closer to the audience and they can get up in their face and kind of the heels can kind of jaw with the audience. The baby faces have an opportunity to slap hands all the way up the entrance instead of once they hit the barrier about halfway down. I don't know that I'd fully advocate for going that direction, but I like in full. But I think in cities where they have a really strong market and have the ability to sell virtually the whole arena, I mean it's not bad. Like they do a good enough job with it to make it still feel like a big deal and like it's presentable. Yeah. Now I don't know if like maybe I'd feel a little bit differently if the crowd wasn't as hot.
Right.
Like, yeah. So much of this feeling like a big show was because of the crowd that if you didn't have a crowd that was as rabid as they were all night, I do fear, you know, maybe it does feel like a step down.
Okay. So let's give out the phone number and the email and encourage anyone who hasn't yet to participate. Our phone number is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. And when you call, push 1 on your keypad. That'll flag you on our switchboard so that we know you're not just calling to listen in, but you actually want to be on the show. You can also email Wade Keller Podcast at pwtorch.com. Wade Keller Podcast at pwtorch.com. First up is our VIP priority caller, our VIP member priority caller, Chris from Oklahoma. Chris, welcome. Thanks for kicking off the show tonight. What's on your mind about tonight's episode?
Well, I was actually going to piggyback off something you said about the stadium and being in Puerto Rico and how hot the crowd was. I was wondering, a few months back or so, You said on a Ask the Editor edition, you didn't think that a WrestleMania in London would actually ever work. Are you rethinking that now, considering how hot the crowds have been in like Puerto Rico and places like that, or possibly even going to Puerto Rico for WrestleMania? Would you ever even consider that, maybe that or one of the big four, you know, Survivor Series or whatever?
Yeah, I think one of the big four, I mean, that would be cool if WrestleMania went, you know, was in London. There's so much that WWE does WrestleMania weekend, and I think the logistics for them of taking that two-night show, 3 with SmackDown, 4 with Raw, if you bookend everything, the Hall of Fame, the travel, it is a really challenging endeavor that WWE undertakes with WrestleMania. And I don't think there's a real desire within WWE to needlessly complicate the busiest, most stressful weekend of the year for everybody. If they have markets in the United States that will embrace them and support them the way that they do. But make no mistake, WWE knows, and Tony Khan knows WWE knows. You can see him on Twitter. It comes through. Like, he is proud of this moment. When Dynamite beat Raw in the demos, early on, it was like he was not shy about pointing that out. Ratings haven't been great. Viewership hasn't been great for them this year. It's down year over year. Him having a breaking point that he can be proud of has him buoyed again. And WWE's going to notice that. And, I mean, I'm not saying that they're going to just instantly go, all right, we got to book, WrestleMania 42. We're going to start planning to be in London because of this. But it's going to be more on their radar, Chris. I just think the logistics of WrestleMania itself, it's tough. And they don't need to. But any of the other events, for reasons Brandon just mentioned a few minutes ago, with the Peacock deal, a couple more years left on it, if they don't renegotiate that or if it doesn't change – That circumstance stands. The time slot isn't as important. You don't want to be live at 2 a.m. You have to be. Can't have that happen. And so you've got to make sure that the time slot in the United States and the time slot to have a live audience at the event works out. Brandon, what do you think? Does what's happening in Puerto Rico and with Wembley recalibrate WWE's international perspective when it comes to the major four pay-per-views press?
I would think that it opens up the possibility for the Rumble, SummerSlam, Survivor Series. I would certainly think that that's the case. And a lot of people have considered Money in the Bank to be a borderline, big five, it would be the fifth. And that is obviously, in London this year. So they're already kind of headed in that direction. For the reasons that you mentioned, Wade, I don't think that they'll go as far as WrestleMania. And I think that extends not just because of the chaotic nature and the number of shows that they need to book, but WrestleMania has become an American institution in a way. Wade, you kind of kicked off the show by talking about how WWE wants to be accepted in the mainstream and become part of, the American culture and just be so ingrained and normal and not looked at and looked down upon. The rise of WrestleMania as a massive event has been no small part in them achieving that status. And I think if you take that event outside of the United States with its place where it is now, I think you open yourself up to criticism about taking away money from the American economy as an American company, because it is viewed in the same breath and conversation as the Final Four, as the Super Bowl, as the Olympics. Granted, it's not as big as those events, but it does bring a ridiculous amount of tourist money to the locations that host it. So I don't think that they want to get away from that. I think it's the reason that you haven't seen WrestleMania return to Toronto since 2002. That's a huge market for them. And WrestleMania 18 was really successful, but it's outside of America. And I don't think they want to take that brand outside of the U.S.
Now, are they thinking maybe we should have run Wembley instead of the O2 Arena for Money in the Bank? I mean,
sure.
Maybe that's crossed their mind, but then they would put themselves in a position to maybe be embarrassed by being outdrawn by AEW. I mean, first time in the market might work, although, it's been for the UK to get a live WWE pay-per-view. I mean, we hear from people and have for decades. People want more in the UK. They want more. That whole, and just Europe in general, Australia wants it too. Everybody wants a WWE live event. They want to be the center of the WWE attention and the center of the WWE universe, more often. And, the O2 Arena crowd is going to be amazing, and they're going to be into it, and it's always a blast when I shouldn't say that. Sometimes the shows that WWE has done on overseas tours have been flat because they just stop booking and they just throw matches on TV. Mm-hmm. But for a pay-per-view, it's going to be special. Frankly, I mean, people in London might be watching the Backlash this weekend going, we got to top them. We're going to show how it's done. And I hope it inspires WWE crowds to be more excited and into the shows when they attend. Give as long as WWE earns it, you know, you don't just cheer for nothing. But anyway, Chris, I'll throw it back to you.
And on that note, I was thinking about Puerto Rico and how, you know, they're booking this great event. And, you know, everyone's been talking about Roman Reigns' schedule. To me, if you were WWE, would you have said, hey, you know you're not going to wrestle at this event, but what about making an appearance? Because they don't get events like the U.S. does. Why not make one appearance at least to say, in good faith, to say, hey, you know, I'm here, I'm your champion, one of your champions, I'm the SmackDown champion. What do you think about their decision to leave him off the pay-per-view, PLE whatsoever?
Well, Roman Reigns is in a position where, I mean, when he's clocked into work, he's clocked in and he gives you everything he's got. But he's not at a point in his career, and it's weird saying this because it doesn't feel like he's been around that long, but he's been around long enough to be the top guy and has earned it and certainly overcome obstacles, which I'm told he sort of has a sense of humor about some of his missteps early and some of the booking missteps early. But he's in a great spot. But his latest deal he negotiated, and he has top guy. He has a top guy schedule. And it's not the travel schedule that he had. It's not the same for anybody now as it was years ago. I mean, you hear that, like I hear from people in AEW who have been around a long time, like, you know, the what you call them, coaches, the producers and stuff, like the way the young wrestlers talk about, oh my God, every week I've got to pack and show up. And then there's a pay-per-view again. I got to travel twice in a week. And they're like, shut up. You know, you have no, you know, learn your history. We used to, you know, be on the road for 10 straight days. We'd have time to go home for 3 days to unpack, say hi to a couple of relatives and then pack again for another trip. It was just, they worked way more on the road. Roman Reigns has earned it. And I mean, WWE would for sure want him around, but there is a benefit to him not being around, and hyping every appearance he has is a big deal. WWF used to do that with Hulk Hogan. He didn't appear on the TV shows very often. He'd do localized interviews to promote the house shows, but he didn't appear on the main TV shows that they did very often. And when he did, it was a big deal, and they really framed a Hogan appearance as a big deal. So there is a benefit to doing that, but asking Roman to just show up, I mean, that's a lot to ask of somebody who just wants to be home and be a dad and work on other projects on the side. And, you know, he negotiated the deal and he had the leverage to do it, and, you know, more power to him for doing it. I don't hold that against him. Brandon, your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, the contract he negotiated is the contract he negotiated. I mean, if WWE felt that they needed him for this show, I don't know how his contract is laid out, but I would guess that it's, you know, in a sense like Brock Lesnar's, where WWE kind of picks and chooses. He has, you know, X number of dates that he's available for, and WWE picks and chooses what they would like him to work. I think they've done a good enough job putting together a card that feels big enough for this show. And based on the reactions in Puerto Rico tonight, it feels like the crowd is pretty accepting about the product that they're getting and what's being presented for them. I mean, they are, of course, getting Bad Bunny, who is a mega star the world over, but particularly in Puerto Rico. And they also get, you know, first time ever Cody Rhodes and Brock Lesnar, which has been a hot feud on TV for the most part. And I think that they feel satisfied with it. I mean, would I prefer the champion be around and be on a show that is being promoted as a big deal like this one? Yeah, definitely. And it is a little bit disappointing that, you know, he's going to show up next week on SmackDown to start whatever program they need him for Saudi. But, you know, it is what it is.
Chris, what else have you got for us?
The other thing I was wondering about with this championship, a name I've heard floated around, I can't believe I'm saying, would you ever have a problem with the heat magnet Dominic Mysterio being the Raw champion? Would it be something you would be, what would your headline be? I'm curious on the newsletter if that were to happen.
WTF? No. Dominic's great. I mean, right. Dominic's great, and he's growing up before our very eyes as a heel. I mean, he's the way he carries himself as he walks to the ring, he knows something special is happening. And every crowd, he's getting the most heel heat, and he's earned it. You know, I mean, did he get a leg up? Would he still be in NXT toiling around and being yelled at by a trainer and trying to be driven out of the business if he wasn't Rey's son? Yeah, maybe. You know, I mean, that is, you know, baked in, and it's, for better or for worse, part of life. But he's not, like, they're not pushing him because despite not being over. Like, he's getting more of a push than he would have gotten otherwise because he's so over. And it has to do with his one improvement in the ring, but mostly his character, his heel punk-ass kid demeanor. And he does it so well. And he's standing in that ring, and he's so believable as the guy that you would expect to be booed and pelted with boos where he can't even talk because the crowd is so loud. All that said, he should become a world champion at this point. I think that would hurt him. I think that would put him in the category of being overpushed. And I don't think you need to take that chance. And I don't think there's an upside to elevating him to that level. I'd pick Logan Paul over Dominic at this point to be the first Raw champion. If I had to choose between the two of them. But you know, if you're going to go outside the box of, you know, Seth or somebody like that, Brandon, your thoughts?
Yeah, Dom is a really interesting and unique case because he's one of the few wrestlers that seems to get over more the more that he loses, because despite losing and having no credibility, he remains so ridiculously confident and unabashedly arrogant when he has no reason to be whatsoever, that seems to be helping him draw heat. So I think that putting him in a position and putting a title on him, especially a brand new title that you need to establish and build credibility for, would be the wrong move, because he's not credible, and he's not supposed to be. That's part of his draw, is the fact that he's in this position that he really has no business being in. So I think it would ruin some of the aesthetic of his presentation if you were to put a title on him like that.
Chris, you can follow up on that or close with another topic if you've got one.
Well, no, I was just curious how you all react to that, because I was thinking about that, how much heat he has. I mean, that would make him, oh gosh, I'd hate to hear how much more heat he could get if that ever happened.
He'd get a lot of heat, but I mean, yeah. I mean, if it was I don't know. I mean, I'd have to think about a scenario where I'd be in favor of that and wouldn't be worried about a negative backlash. Things are going so well. There's certain chances you want to take, but I don't know that elevating Dom, because you would have to define it down as a joke, Reign. You can't do it seriously, or there would be a pushback. And if you treat him as a joke as opposed to just have him slotted properly, like, you know, you don't put a 5'8" point guard out there guarding a center. You know, I mean, it's just that even no matter how talented they are at passing, you're putting them in a losing position. And Dominic's winning position in pro wrestling is not world champion. But I mean, the fact that people are saying it, and I think some are probably thinking as a joke, but others are like, why not? He's got so much heel heat. You know, there's money in doing it. You know, I mean, if the argument for it is strike while they're hot, no matter what the drawbacks are. AEW did not do that with Hook a year and a half ago. You know, they had something real special with him, and he's in the same spot treading water a year and a half later, not getting the type of crowd responses. And, you know, he wasn't ready, but they should have done more with him. You know, if they cooled off. So, Yeah. I mean, it's a different type thing. I mean, Wardlow kind of, you know, went through the indies and was, you know, kind of a more, I won't say polished because he's unpolished in a lot of ways, but he was more tenured as an actual pro wrestler. But yeah, I mean, the window, you know, might be closing on him in this current incarnation. And you're right. I mean, Chris, they did take too long to just go with what you've got and you know, put them out there and see what happens.
I think it just creates an optics problem with Dom, because you have a brand new title that you're trying to establish as an equal to what Roman Reigns has done over on SmackDown. You're trying to establish these two separate strong champions. So you're going to have on Friday nights the champion who's held the title for, you know, combined over 1,000 days at that point. And then on Raw, your very first champion is the guy who pretty much never wins matches and is, you know, the hook of his character is the whole Prison Dom thing. I think it'd be really hard to sell and get people to buy into in the way that I think they need to for Dominic to be over as a central figure on the show and be getting the appropriate heat. I think that at that point you might be crossing over into malcontent and sort of go away heat.
Now, if Dominic won the US or IC title, I think you can get away with that.
Much different, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to – I can't conjure the scenario right now because two heels have the belts. But if there's a babyface with the belt and it's natural and you're trying to figure out what to do next for Dominic, having him walk around, you know, with the title belt over his shoulder, I mean, I can only imagine the heel heat that he'd have for how he would carry that around, like he just owned the place. So, you know, there's alternatives to winning the Raw tournament. I'll put it that way. Chris, any quick closing words?
Well, quick closing words, go VIP, you'll never regret it.
Thanks, Chris. Good closing words. Appreciate it. PWTorch.com/goVIP. Our number is 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1 to let us know that you want to be on the show. We'll go next to another Chris. Chris from Warner Robins, Georgia. I believe you are up next. Go ahead, Chris, and tell us what's on your mind about SmackDown tonight.
Hey, Wynn and Brandon. You're right. The crowd was amazing. Tomorrow night, they're probably more big a fire with them in their bodies for this stuff. Even like Bad Bunny coming out, he looked more jacked than he looked before. So maybe that had an effect on him. But it's all cool. The tournament. Okay. The thing about this, you got the SmackDown and the Raw wrestlers. I know.
If it wasn't for that damn crowd, Chris, we would have led with that, and it would have been a more down. We would not be as positive as we are. But go ahead, yeah.
I know. But the thing about it is that part of my inkling of Roman coming back next week and him probably saying I want to be in this tournament may be a thing. Do you think there's a possibility they put him in there because Paul did say he liked the idea of, like, you know, holding that championship? Is that a way for them to have a backdoor for at least prestigious title, but somehow Cody and Roman meet for this title and Cody somehow beats him? I don't think Cody wants to win Saudi Arabia, but you never know.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like such a fool, you know, for spending a week analyzing who the first Raw World Heavyweight Champion is going to be of this incarnation based on the post-draft Raw roster with this announcement. And they're not even apologizing for it. I mean, I've got this full-page column in this week's Wrestling Torch newsletter, expanded after Raw, and inclusive of everybody who's drafted and looking at various options. And then what do we find out? Oh, yeah, we're going to have a SmackDown's going to be represented in this. It makes absolutely no sense. It's so stupid to say the draft takes effect the Monday after Backlash. And we have, and in the same couple-week period, we have created a new title because SmackDown has Reigns, whoever drafts Reigns will be the home of, I'm saying the obvious thing here, but the home of the Undisputed Universal Champion. So we need a title for Raw. How are we going to decide who that champion of Raw is? We're going to have post-draft SmackDown wrestlers, presumably, compete, or Raw wrestlers visit SmackDown, which I don't think is the case, but they didn't even specify that. We don't know who's in it. It's dumb, but it does open up a week's worth of speculation, Brandon, of what they are actually going to do with this. I mean, in terms of expanding the range of topics for the conversation the next week, it's not going to get redundant because they threw this twist in there. I do not approve of it, but it is what we have to deal with now. And Roman Reigns is an intriguing person. I don't think Reigns is going to win the title. Is he potentially going to be in the match trying to win it? I wouldn't rule that out, but I don't think it would be Cody. I was told, and I said specifically a few weeks back in a different context, that Roman is going to be at Night of Champions. And at that time, I thought Night of Champions is going to be three rounds, one night. They're going to ask wrestlers to compete three, you know, the winning wrestlers would compete three times. You know, they'd have quarterfinals, quarterfinals, semifinals, and then the final. And I'm like, well, you know, maybe Roman skips this one. I still don't know. He is scheduled to be there and wrestle there. So I don't know what other match he has. And so, I mean, maybe. Do you like the idea of giving that Raw World Heavyweight Championship extra credibility? Brandon, you buy the premise, and you like it if Seth, for instance, beats Roman, and that's how they establish, hey, this title actually means something because he beat Roman. Even though the Universal title wouldn't be on the line at that point, Seth would have beat the Universal champ, so that gives him extra credibility, and then sets up, you know, the pin that Roman's going to be obsessed with knocking down, which is hating the fact that the Raw Championship got one up on him.
No.
Yep.
I rolled my eyes so hard when they announced this. I am someone who went to bat fairly heavily for Reigns retaining the title at WrestleMania, and I am starting to I'm starting to give up that held belief. I based on the way that this month has gone, I'm coming around to the idea that I think it may have been a mistake, because I think everything they've done post WrestleMania has put them in completely unnecessary predicaments that is going to lead to any number of things, and none of those things are particularly appealing. I think that by creating the Raw Championship, you are sending the message that, first of all, creating this Raw Championship from the get-go, to me, is sending a message that it is the consolation title. It's the title people can have because they can't beat Roman Reigns. And I think I can get past that. I think, you know, I don't love it. I don't love the optics of it. And I don't like that they're straight up acknowledging it on TV in a certain way with Paul Heyman. But I think that they could overcome it. What I don't like even more is this idea that Paul Heyman trotted out that Roman Reigns can't compete for it because he's on SmackDown, only to then find out that SmackDown wrestlers are going to be invited to compete in a tournament for a shot at the Raw Championship. Now, that it doesn't make sense for a number of reasons. First, of course, being that it's the Raw Championship and SmackDown already has a title. But second, and I think more importantly, is why, after a fresh draft where wrestlers have been moved to one show or the other, would the network, who presumably is in control here, of course, WWE didn't go the route of having like a Fox and USA war room this time, and I think that's right. Probably for the better. But regardless, they are presented as competing brands. So why would the powers that be on SmackDown, whoever that may be okay with the idea that one of their wrestlers is going to go to Night of Champions, potentially win the Raw Championship, and then leave SmackDown for Raw? Why would they ever agree to that?
Right, yes.
Why would they allow that to happen? They're willingly giving up one of their top talents, essentially, is what this agreement creates. So putting that aside, you get a Raw versus SmackDown wrestler at Night of Champions. So we're already going on a soft brand split, because we're, at this point, we won't even be a month into the rosters being split, and we're already going to get Raw versus SmackDown. So I don't like that. And
no.
Then add to that the fact that if it's Roman Reigns, you have two choices. Roman Reigns wins the title, and then you still don't have a championship on Raw, and your title's been created for virtually nothing.
Well, just make a new one.
Yeah, just make another new one. Roman can carry three. He'll keep winning them until he can't carry the belts anymore.
I hear All Atlantic is available.
Or the opposite side here is that Roman Reigns faces someone on Raw and loses to someone on Raw in the midst of his historic 1,000-plus day run that he hasn't lost during. Neither of those solutions is remotely acceptable.
No. And not all of that has happened yet, so I'm not going to get angry about something that I'm imagining. But the thing is the way it's structured, right now, based on what we know, it could happen. And that's worth being angry about because it doesn't make any sense.
And even if it doesn't happen, how do you explain why it doesn't? Because if Roman Reigns is a SmackDown wrestler and SmackDown wrestlers are competing in a tournament for this championship, it stands to reason that Roman Reigns, ultimate conqueror, head of the table, longest reigning modern WWE champion, would want to prove that he should also be champion of the other brand. So do you just have him casually ignore the tournament? Because that goes entirely against everything his character stands for. And so your only option then is to put him in the tournament. And if he's in the tournament and he doesn't win, you have the same problem that I just mentioned.
And I wonder if he's going to be in the triple threat match, one of the triple threat matches, but it's going to be a major angle involving Solo or the Usos or something like that. And that's where there's no way the premise is you can defend the premise as logical. Now, the question is, do they have something in mind that's going to mitigate some of the outlandish lack of logic that is involved in this premise that we do have to wait to see on? I mean, we just have to wait and see on that.
Yeah.
If there's a major satisfying angle, it's going to, offset some of the understandable outrage over this. So I'll just put that out there. All right. So, Chris, let me go back to you. I want to keep the pace up here with a bunch of people on hold. Go ahead if you have a follow-up on what we said or a different topic.
Yeah, you kind of want them just to give the WWE title to Raw, but at the same time, like, I maintain he should have gone to 1,000 days because that's special, no matter what way you cut it.
Oh, yeah.
But
they
could have – part of me thinks they're trying to push, like, Hulk Hogan's record back by giving Roman this, so that could play a part in this too. But for tomorrow night, like, you think that's the time when Solo pulls the trigger on murking his brothers?
On wedding his brothers?
Like, murking them, taking them out.
gotcha. No, I think it's too soon. I think there's a larger story arc going on here. I'm not with certitude ruling it out. I just my thinking is there's more story to tell here, and they're not going to do it that quickly. Brandon, how about you?
Yeah, I don't think they will. I think that they've got more in the canon, and I think that that's probably a good thing. I like the dynamic that they're creating right now between the Usos and Solo, in the sense that it feels like Jimmy Uso especially is getting comfortable in a way that he shouldn't. He's like, he and Jay have kind of resorted back to the sing-songy type cadence in their promos, and they're doing like the more jokey type back and forth stuff that they weren't doing for a long time. They're smiling more. They seem generally less concerned when everyone else can see that there's a storm brewing within the bloodline, and that Solo is getting, continuously fed up with their behavior. I thought tonight did a really good job of kind of lending itself to that idea with Jay confronting Solo and Solo, actually saying some rare words. I think that they're doing a good job with that, and especially in Roman's absence, they've been able to keep the bloodline story moving. So I think they've got more to tell there.
I'm intrigued, but I'm nervous about the context of everything and whether they just plow through his storylines regardless of in betrayal of the trust that WWE viewers have put in the structure and logic of why this title exists, which in and of itself is controversial enough. And then if it seems like they're breaking up the bloodline to accommodate a storyline that doesn't make sense and has flaws, I think that will take away from it, I guess is my point. Chris, anything else you want to add?
I probably have to say, Cody versus Brock, how do you think this is going to go? Because you think Cody kind of needs to win after this one, so technically, like, to kind of propel him forward. I mean, he's still over his all get out because those people love him. Yeah. So Like, you know, I'm just trying to see, like, what do you think is the best direction for Cody?
Yeah, so I will plug Greg Parks, longtime Pro Wrestling Torch columnist, host of the PWD Torch Daily Cast Sunday night call-in show, Wrestling Night in America. It'll be Saturday night this weekend. He'll be doing the live Backlash post show. So join him at pwtorchdailycast.com or look for the link at the top and bottom of my report. And if I remember, Brandon, I'll send you the link, too, to put in at the top and bottom of your report. So we encourage everybody listening to this to know that Greg will be hosting the live post show. It'll go live about 5 minutes after Backlash ends, and we'll have a direct link to that. But you can bypass that and just go to PW Torch Daily Cast and click on the menu that says live stream, the menu option. So all that said, Greg was on with me last night on the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcast, and we did an in-depth Backlash preview for 75-plus minutes, and we had a lot to say about the Cody Brock situation. I'm not trying to punt my opinion answering your question here, but we did a lot of back-and-forth pros and cons, really delved into that at length yesterday. So I will comment on it in a moment, but I just point you to that Backlash preview if people haven't listened to that yet, and try to listen to that before tomorrow night. I thought it was a good show and really delved into each of the matches and some sidebar topics, too. Yep, but Brandon, I want to get your thoughts on Cody Lesnar. I don't want to say too much about it.
Yeah, sure. I definitely would like to see Cody win. I think at this point he needs a good rebound coming out of WrestleMania and the surprise loss to Roman Reigns. I think that a win sets him up nicely to move forward and get into another program heading into the summer. Lesnar, I don't think is around enough right now to really warrant feeding Cody another loss at this stage of the game, unless this is going to be a multi-month program. I mean, if they have ideas for Lesnar and Cody beyond just this one match, then I could see them going a different direction and giving Brock the first win, having Cody get a little obsessive about the idea of beating him, and then Cody ultimately comes out on top of the feud in the end. But if this is a one-off, I think it's important for Cody to win.
Yeah, and I think it could go either way depending on the story they're telling. I think if Cody loses, it could be part of the Cody is and again, it depends on how he loses and how he looks in the match. But I think there's a way to tell the story of Brock beating Cody to set up Brock as a credible opponent for Cody later after Cody wins the tournament. Mm-hmm. And again, it's all how you tell that story where you protect Cody. I mean, I was struck by the commentary where Wade Barrett is just like, Cody better have a game plan or he's going to be annihilated by Brock. This is one of the biggest mismatches in Cody's career. Cole pushed back a little, which I'm glad he did. Didn't make a big deal out of it. But, you know, that's not an accident. That's not – I doubt Barrett got yelled at for that. I'm sure he got instructed or steered into saying that. So they are portraying this as if Cody wins, it's an upset, which is weird considering, you know, he's, you know, at some point going to be a world champion in that company. Mm-hmm. But it is also setting up the possibility that Cody doesn't win because he was the underdog and, you know, something happened that might, again, and this is where I just have to hold out for the possibility that, you know, because Cody mentioned it, we still don't know why Brock attacked me. Maybe I'll find out after I beat him tomorrow night or, you know, maybe I'll find out tomorrow night. They're still reminding you of that story and that it hasn't been filled in. Now, it might never get colored in. We might never get the full explanation and they just, you know, move on. And that's happened before. But they are drawing attention to it. So there's a chance Cody loses, but it's part of an angle where, say, Paul Heyman instructs Solo Sikoa to go help Lesnar win. And it's you know, so in other words, there's possibilities out there where it's not just about a win or loss. That's kind of what I got into with Greg, is it could be – what matters more is the story they tell regardless of the W or the L next to Cody's name after the match. And so that's me adding nuance to the possibility. It's not just, it's either right or wrong, win or lose.
Yeah, I can see that. And I think too, with Cody, the good thing is if they do go the route of him taking another loss here, while Cody is still as hot as he is, I think he's a good character to garner sympathy and to turn the loss into a motivation for him. I think that they have to toe a line there because he can't do that forever. But I don't think just because he lost to Roman Reigns last month means that he can't take a loss to someone of Brock Lesnar's caliber. I just don't want to see them get into that habit, you know, every month.
Yes. Yep. All right. I'll throw back to Chris for some final words before we move on to the next caller. Chris, anything else you want to bring up?
The only thing I also want to bring up is Cameron Grimes. What do you think of his presentation tonight? And, like, you know, they seem to put him in a better light than just being picked last.
Yeah, that was interesting. First of all, it looked like he got all, like, it's like he got brought back to WWE after trying to interview for, like, a corporate proper job. Like, I mean, he was all clean. He cleans up really nice, you know? He just sparkling blue eyes, shaved beard, hair tied back, a nice shirt. I mean, it was like he was dressed to go to church or something. Yeah, I don't know what's up with that. He's lost, like, everything that made him distinctive with that sort of caveman gimmick. And I don't know why. I mean, I don't know why, and I don't know how I feel about it because it was such a small sample size. I do know that drawing attention to being the last draft pick, to me, seems more likely negative than positive, unless the idea is they're really going to lean into that, and it's not just a one-off thing for Corbin to shine a spotlight on, but that it's going to be like he's got a chip on his shoulder, and the story of him is he's going to prove those draft people that he was drafted too low. And, I mean, you can tell an effective story with that. That's an NFL-NBA story that occurs. It might have been a thoughtless decision at the time. Vince went, oh, just pick him there, but not there. And that was an input, and they just went with it. But maybe it is part of something larger. So, again, that's part of my wait-and-see mentality on some things so you don't get burned by being too, you know, having too strong of an opinion about something that's a work in progress. But my leaning is to think this, it isn't good for him to have Baron Corbin and him interact in a scripted, stilted way that draws attention to that. And then it just also drew attention to the nonsense about free agent status and Corbin, you know, putting the story out. Well, both sides fought over me so much that they just made me a free agent. I did like Pierce pushing back on that, going, that's not exactly how it happened. Yeah, I mean, Cameron Grimes is so good. And he was just such a star in the indie circuit. He's, you know, really good was really good in NXT and Impact. I mean, everywhere he's gone, he's been good. He's talented. I have high hopes for him to be sort of like the next AJ Styles, you know, a guy who's undersized and people think might not be, you know, a great fit for WWE. And he's just so good that everybody just respects him so damn much that he's more than Chad Gable. He's not treated as a joke, but beating Baron Corbin, that's Corbin's job now is to be a lower card gatekeeper. He just loses to people. So I assume Grimes loses Brandon. And I'm sorry, I assume Corbin loses Brandon. And that it's just stage one of hopefully a sincere push for Cameron Grimes. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I would certainly hope that Corbin loses. But with Vince back in weekly planning and weekly creative, it's hard to say because it's not beneath him to introduce a new character and have them lose out of the gate to somebody beneath them to try to teach them a lesson, to try to build them, you know, break them down, build them back up. I mean, that's a classic Vinceism, so to speak. So I wouldn't put it past him to do that. I hope that's not the play here. But I do worry that introducing him in this manner, putting him up against Corbin right out of the gate, and like you said, Wade, having the style of promo that they did, I don't think that it speaks well to the initial road for Grimes. But I think that it's going to be on him to rise above it. I mean, much in the way that a guy like LA Knight has risen above sort of his position on the card. And we'll see what happens going forward. But yeah, I don't think it was a great, just positive introduction.
What do you think of his look? I mean, you kind of chuckled as I noted that he's all cleaned up, the beard is shaved, but is that, I mean, is he just going to grow it out again? And he showed up, and they're like, what'd you do shaving your beard? He goes, I'll grow back, sorry, guys. You know, like, is that what happened or what?
I don't know. It was so strange. Because I haven't kept up with NXT in quite a while. And so when I saw him, I did a double take, and I was like, wait, that's who? That's Cameron Grimes?
Yeah.
And I wasn't sure if maybe I just missed something. Like, if he had been on NXT TV looking like that for a while and I was just behind the eight ball, but evidently I'm not. So this is new to everybody. So yeah, it threw me off.
And the thing with him is, like, the video package they showed was of Caveman Grimes. Like,
right,
that's where the
right.
focus was. Like, if they had shown a different incarnation of him, I'd be like, oh, they're going to go a different direction with him. And, but, like, the footage they showed is this, you know, hairy guy with a caveman finish with a big beard. So, I don't know. I mean, we'll see.
I'm on WWE's roster page right now looking at the new rosters, and it's still the Cameron Grimes you speak of.
Yep. All right. Chris, I appreciate the call from you. Good to hear from you.
You too, guys.
All right, very good. We've exhausted Chris with our answers. Thanks, Chris. All right, let's see. Who is up next? We've got Brad in Florida. Brad, thanks for calling. What's on your mind about SmackDown tonight?
Hey, Brandon. How you guys doing?
Good.
Good. I just realized that Chris in Oklahoma, I think that's Chris in Oklahoma, the guy, he's like – this show's version of this show's iteration of Judgment Day. I mean, he opens every Raw, every SmackDown, and I'm more like like a Braun Strowman or a Ricochet here. But that's just a little observation. Regardless,
now,
Cameron
Brad,
Grimes
in fairness, you often call the show, Brad, in fairness, you often call the show like 45 minutes, an hour in. It's hard to be first if you aren't actually in line.
Oh, no, absolutely. I'm not even expecting to be first. It's just funny. Like, Chris has opened every show, and he just reminded me of, you know, hearing that Judgment Day song. He should have his own theme song when he comes on at the beginning. But regardless, guys, so essentially, you know, first and foremost, Cameron Grimes, I mean, I've watched NXT pretty much every week for the last year, and Cameron Grimes hasn't been on maybe for 4 months, 3 months at least. But he looked exactly like that. Throughout all the time I've been watching NXT, which is like the last, you know, 12, 15 months. So I've never seen him the other way that you – yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. That's interesting. Because the last incarnation of him was part of a story arc, but I never imagined the cleaned-up, sparkly-eyed Cameron Grimes. This was more than even I remember with NXT, that would be how they'd introduce him. I thought the time off was going to be Caveman. I saw the video. I'm like, I'm expecting – I shouldn't say Caveman. He wasn't really a Caveman. He played that up a little bit. But that's not a distinctive look for him, is it, Brad? Brad, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm sorry. I just heard you say, oh, I thought all the time off. No, but he's looked like that ever since I can remember. And I actually remember when I got WWE 2K22, he was in it, and I saw this, like, really weird-looking version of it, the version that you guys are recalling. And I was like, who the hell is this guy? Because I didn't know him as anything other than the clean-cut Cameron Grimes. So just kind of funny the way it works. But
And the clean-cut guy is the version of the, you know, the being rich and in cleaning up, not, you know, like, well, I should say it. Oh, go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought you were jumping
exactly.
In.
So,
it's part of a storyline that doesn't translate if you debut him. I mean, maybe it does. We haven't seen enough of him for it to be clear what story they're telling with him. But again, the vignette that they showed, I mean, maybe I didn't watch it close enough, but it seemed like it was focused on the old, you know, the old version of him before the rich, you know, the coming into money type story that they told in his last months in NXT. So I don't know. Yeah, it's just that's what's weird to me is I guess I was going to ask you, but you haven't seen the other version of him. I think the other version of him is more distinctive for the main roster.
Yeah, it might be. But, you know, again, I think this is with the money song and the To the Moon. I don't know. I just don't know. I just think whatever it worked because he was really he was very interesting on NXT, to be honest with you. Like he always had really great matches and. You know, with people like Carmelo Hayes and this and that, like really, really good. And I think, you know, I think he'll be able to make an impact if he has matches like that because they're really phenomenal. You know, I mean, whatever. But I guess, what do you think it is with this thing with the Brock Lesnar as the most decorated combat athlete of all time? Now, I don't even disagree with that. And it's funny, I was listening to some podcast about UFC and people were actually saying like if Brock Lesnar was classically trained from a young age in MMA that he probably could have been the best UFC fighter of all time. And it's just interesting that Graves and Kevin Patrick and Cole and the promos and everything have all, and Cody has said it so many times. I think I've heard the most decorated combat athlete 8 or 10 times already on television. And I wonder if that's just a byproduct of the UFC merger with WWE, or if they're trying to get some idea in your head for this specific match. And I was wondering your guys' thoughts on that, or if it's just a bunch of pumping up Brock Lesnar and it doesn't even matter.
I think it's the WWE giving a tagline to somebody, and that's the tagline, and it makes sense. I don't think it's beyond that. They just think that's what he is. And if you're going to come up with a catchphrase that you always push, when it comes to him, that's the new one. And boy, do we hear it a lot. Everyone is instructed to say it. And that's fine. But yeah, I don't think it's related to the, you know, TKO new formation co-company with WWE and UFC.
You know, it's funny because Oh, sorry, Brandon. Go ahead.
Oh, go
sorry,
ahead.
Buddy.
Go ahead.
Go ahead, Brandon.
I don't get the sense necessarily that it's tied. I think they'd probably be more specific if they were really wanting to highlight that. And so far, it seems like they kind of want to shy away from it. So I'm thinking it's more just like, this is what they want you to think about Brock Lesnar now. I mean, they had to retire the next big thing moniker a while back, and Cody Rhodes weirdly brought it up again tonight. But I think it's just what the new thing they want you to think of him as.
Yeah, go ahead, Brad. What else?
Yeah. I with the Brock and Cody match tomorrow night, I tend to think that there's a good chance that this is a squash either way. And I could see it even being a squash by Cody on Brock. And I don't know why. It's almost like they're trying to show this incredible rage in Cody with all the security guards every week. And, you know, they're holding him back and no one can control him. And it almost seems like it could be a squash for Brock, or it could be a squash for Cody. A squash for Brock creating the adversity that they're talking about for Cody, and a squash for Cody showing like, wow, like, this guy just did something to Brock Lesnar that no one's ever done before. You know what I mean? I could see it going either way like that. And I really do think it's going to be a short type of squash match. I mean, can you guys see it being a squash match? Or do you think it's just going to be a regular sort of match that goes both ways until someone wins?
Brandon, what do you think of that?
Well, it's interesting because Brock Lesnar matches always sort of feel like borderline squashes. I mean, whether he wins or loses, they're always sort of that same, you know, like 6 to 8 minute formula. If he's really in a position to put a guy over, maybe they go 10 minutes or so, but he still dominates most of the match, hits his suplexes. So I think that's probably still the style of match that we get. But what you mentioned, Brad, the stuff about Cody being ultra aggressive and really angered to the point of, you know, taking out multitudes of security guards, I think that brings up an interesting possibility here, which is that if they wanted Lesnar to win this match, and I do, again, expect it to be relatively short just because that's how Lesnar matches tend to go, I think you could potentially tell a story where I don't want to suggest a disqualification or on Cody's part, because I think that's a cheap way to go about it, but I think that there's a chance that Cody could mess up in some way, that Cody's rage could get the better of him to the extent that he misses an opportunity, fails to execute a move. He tries to go for one extra Cody cutter or one extra crossroads, and it allows Lesnar to slip up and catch him off guard. And the announcers really sell that as this is less of a match that Lesnar won and more of a match that Cody lost.
Wow. Wow. Very, very interesting. And I love your guys' perspective, and I really appreciate how smart you guys are about everything, but I just wanted you to take my perspective into account on this one last thing that your last caller, Chris, brought up, because I had called Wade right after I saw the Triple H promo when he unveiled the World Raw Championship, the heavyweight championship, And the way the Triple H was talking about Roman Reigns, as he was about to take the cover off the championship, he was saying, this is a champion you're going to be able to be proud of. This is a champion who won't run and hide and take weeks off. This is going to be a champion who will defend the title all over the world with honor, unlike what we have now. Whatever he was saying, it was so over the top, in my opinion, that when I saw Roman Reigns returns next week, I really think there's only two possibilities. And the reason why I say this, what I'm about to say, is because if you have that title, it will always feel like a bronze medal. It will always feel like a third place trophy unless Roman Reigns is involved in it. And I, again, Seth Rollins wins it, Cody wins it, whoever wins it. It could be Omos who wins it. It doesn't matter. It will never feel like that's a real part of the championship story as much as the others, unless I feel like Roman Reigns gets involved. Now, I don't see much of a difference between, for instance, Roman winning the SmackDown side of the tournament and facing Cody Rhodes. And it might, I don't think they'd want Cody Rhodes to win that championship in Saudi Arabia, but I could see Roman winning that championship at, say, Night of Champions, holding on to it for a month or two, and with Cody winning Money in the Bank, and then challenging for that championship and taking that championship back to Raw after a win at SummerSlam. I mean, I just don't see a way that that championship feels as important without Roman Reigns being involved. And the fact that we saw Roman Reigns returns tonight, I just don't see a problem with him losing a match to Cody for that championship at a SummerSlam, for example, for only that championship. If he was going to lose at WrestleMania, and a lot of people were pining for that, obviously, I don't see a problem with him losing that match and holding on to the other two belts. And I don't know if you guys can take that perspective at all and make sense of it, or call me a fool. Either way, I'm fine with it. But I just don't feel like if Roman's not involved, I feel like Roman has to either win that championship and hold on to it for 2 months until he drops it in an incredible moment to Cody, or something along those lines, because I just don't see any other way where that championship feels as important. And I think that's what Roman's going to do next week. I really do.
Yeah, so we explored that earlier in the show. Brandon, you're thinking you don't want a blemish on Reigns' record while he's bragging about this title reign where he comes up short trying to win another title, or, you know, loses to the other champion, whether it's Cody or Seth or whomever. What do you think about the way Brad lays that out and some of the more specifics, including, you know, maybe Cody winning Money in the Bank, and it's a short-term reign? Because, you know, the idea is the criticism of this Raw belt is it's just Raw wrestlers, and it's half the WWE roster, and it doesn't include Roman Reigns, and it's always going to feel like a secondary title. Is some paths, even if there's some negatives that you've brought up and that are there, are they offset enough to make it worth? Are they offset enough by giving, in theory, extra credibility to the title by having Roman involved in some form or fashion? In the same way that I made a case for Lesnar maybe being a good person to be involved in the title early.
Yeah, it's certainly a nuanced discussion, and I think that there's going to be negatives to almost every way that they go about this, and I pointed that out earlier just because I think WWE has really painted themselves into a corner here, and I don't see, and it could be that I'm overlooking something entirely. I just don't see a way out of this scenario where they don't either immediately tarnish the credibility of their new championship, kind of as you alluded to, Brad, or they hurt the legacy of this Reigns title run. And I don't like that they put themselves in that position. So you solve sort of the first issue with putting the title on Reigns out of the gate to sort of establish some credibility for the championship. The issue that I have with someone like Cody, say, beating Reigns at SummerSlam for the new title isn't so much that Cody is beating Roman Reigns at SummerSlam rather than like at WrestleMania, but it's that at some point Reigns still has to lose the undisputed title And to me, it feels like if he loses a one-on-one match prior to that date, prior to the expiration of this historic title run, it's going to cheapen the moment of him giving up those titles. Because part of the reason you want to keep these titles on someone for so long is to give the eventual successor a massive moment. This guy did what no one else was able to do. Well, if Cody Rhodes does it at SummerSlam, then someone else was able to do it. It was just a technicality that it didn't happen to be for the Undisputed title. That's where I get hung up on that.
I mean,
Brad,
that couldn't answer my question any better. And I totally hear you. Maybe they're thinking of it, guys, as two moments we can do here. I don't know, but I don't think it's, again, like, I just, you're right. They backed themselves into a corner. I just don't see a way where the title feels as important. I mean, the other option could be he orders Solo to go get the title, or maybe he orders even Jay to go get the title. I don't know. And Jay fails, you know, I don't know, but like, I really think just more than anything, again, I hate to keep saying the same thing, and I'll let you guys go, but the way Triple H spoke about it when it was unveiled was really telling to me, and it showed me, hey, there's a chance this guy hijacks this belt. And then you had Paul Heyman last week on Raw come out and talking about how good it would look on Roman. And hey, Roman, you know, Paul Heyman's got two arms too. He could hold two belts, so we could have four on Roman. But in all seriousness, I do think that there's a very strong possibility of this happening. I personally would like it. I think it would be cool. And I think it gives that belt extra credibility. But you're right. There's no great answer, but the answer could be two moments, maybe not ideal, but the answer also could be, hey, Roman just doesn't win it, and it over time grows to feel more meaningful. That belt. I don't know. But thanks for taking my call, guys. Love hearing this stuff. Thank you.
Yeah. And I think Brad's call, Brandon, illustrates what I meant when I said earlier, we can be angry about the lack of logic involved in this, but the fact that there's going to be tournament matches on SmackDown does add things for us to talk about for the next week in the realm that we're in.
Well, he brought up a really great point too. And thanks, Brad, for kind of triggering that idea. That's the way out to keep Reigns out of the tournament is Reigns can logically, at least to some extent, say that he wants the bloodline running both shows. So he attempts to shoehorn Jimmy or Jay or Solo in the position to go win the Raw title. And they can succeed or fail. I mean, and then you tell whatever story you want based on that, but it gives Roman Reigns an out for not competing for the title while still asserting dominance. Essentially, Reigns can present it as he's a caring and giving tribal chief. He could enter the tournament himself and he would guarantee that he would win that title, but because he loves his cousins, he's going to give them the opportunity to do it and go rule their own show.
There you go. And you know what? They've wanted, I mean, having the bloodline on both shows in some form or fashion is a strategy that I could see them wanting, even with a roster split, to tell a story where they could have that make sense. There's so many different directions this could go, and we're going to find out a lot about what this roster split means, the future of the bloodline, how quickly the pace of what's going on with Heyman and Solo, for instance, takes place. Jay, you said like Jay and Jimmy getting too comfortable, although they even bickered slightly. I mean, it was a total like lighthearted one, like you had to ask, didn't you? But, you know, there's so many things that they can do, and I don't know. I mean, the number of options is more than I can handle evaluating one by one at this point with that twist that they threw our way. But
Before we move on, Wade, one last thing regarding the beginning of the conversation with Brad on a far less serious note.
Yeah.
I am looking at pictures of Cameron Grimes.
Yeah.
I think where we all went wrong is that there appears to be three iterations of Cameron Grimes. the one that you and I were talking about where he's got like the big scraggly beard and the unkempt long hair. Then there's sort of version two where he cleans up the beard, which I'm familiar with that version as well. He cleans up the beard, he comes into money, all of that sort of thing. But he's still got the beard. And then there's tonight's look where it's even more trimmed.
Well, and his hair's pulled up. I don't remember his hair being pulled up like that.
I see a couple of pictures where he has it pulled up when he's like during the money era, during like the rich era, the North American champion run.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, the combination of I wouldn't call it it's a dress shirt, but it's a snazzy nightclub dress shirt. But that and his hair being pulled up and just having no connection. And in the vignette they aired, I mean, I think there was a glimpse of a trimmed beard, but it was mostly focusing on him when he was hairy and had the big beard and all that. So I don't know. I mean, this could have been he didn't tell him what they wanted, and he just showed up looking like he looks. I hope this is a situation where they introduce the audience to whoever they want him to be in a way that if you didn't follow the iterations on NXT or anything prior to NXT, of course, also that you have an idea of who he is. Tonight didn't do that. The video, the vignette was all over the place, but mostly this guy with a big scraggly beard. And then you got this guy showing up again, who looks like he's going to church or interviewing for a job, or a best man at a wedding or something, you know, like it's just, okay, you know, you're here for, you look good. That's not a gimmick. And so I want them to, and where he ended up in NXT at the end, or in the last, you know, months, the last incarnation, is not something you can just introduce without context on main television. Well, you just got to tell the story. So I was expecting and anticipating Cameron Grimes in the draft, who showed up, to have taken time off and gone back to the look that he had most of the time. But we'll see if that's intentional or not soon enough. Okay, so let's see who's next here. Go to Sean in Murfreesboro. Sean, welcome. What's on your mind about SmackDown tonight?
Well, first of all, I feel weird. You were just talking about Brad, you know, usually calling in a little bit later. I feel so weird when I call in super late. I'm usually, like, ready to hear the whole thing, and I'm like, man, I'm ready for my stuff. And now I'm like, gosh, I'm, like, praying I don't, you know, bring up all these things that you guys have already talked about like 800 times. But anyways, Wade, good to talk to you. Brandon, always fun to talk to you, man. How you guys doing?
Good. Good to hear from you, Sean.
Yeah. Just going on Cameron Grimes, because I was actually going to, you know, ask about that initially. It was funny because when he came on the screen and they did the vignette too, when he was doing the backstage, like I thought it was cool because they made him seem a little more serious initially, and I was like, well, this is kind of cool. But like you said, there is no really backstory yet, so I'm hoping. Well, number one, I hope he beats Baron because I think he has to be Baron. But at the same time, after that, I really do, like you were saying, I hope they, you know, build more of the backstory and kind of give him a gimmick of what they're thinking he's going to be on the show because, you know, he does have a really good upside. I'm curious, you know, what they do with him. But I thought the serious little edge was kind of good for him initially, so we'll see where they go with that. Did you like the serious initialness of him kind of talking to Baron and being like, you know, let's get in the ring, let's do this, you know? Like, was that kind of a good – not a good star because we don't know who he is, but if he's a little more serious, I think that's cool. I like that.
I fear in WWE that if there's not a hook to who you are and they don't establish that at the beginning, that's a sign that they don't know what they're going to do with you. But again, I'm not on my own expressing that. You asked, so I'm answering because it's just so early. This was a quick little thing to set up what they do next week. Next week, a Corbin Grimes match will be the introduction to the Grimes character, and then we'll know. You know, we'll know. How's he gonna dress? I mean, tonight has to be a hint. I mean, he couldn't have just forgotten his wrestling gear, and that's what he. But it does sort of look like he just forgot his wrestling gear, and just that's how he addressed. You know, just so I don't know. We'll wait till next week. I thought the interaction was fine. I think Grimes came across. Corbin is all. I mean, say it all the time. Corbin's acting, when he's not in front of a live crowd, drops a lot. There's just something about the way that he says his lines that sound like he's repeating something he memorized. When he's in front of a crowd, for whatever reason, he's not great. He's not top shelf, but he's good. But when he's backstage and it's a pre-tape, it plummets, and I don't buy anything he says. So that took the segment down for me. But it is, as a side note, not having to do with Grimes, it's amazing how much Corbin has just dropped down to now just a jobber, basically. I mean, there's all these characters and storylines with him, but I mean, he's there to be a lower card gatekeeper for Grimes, I assume, I hope, next week. But I thought Grimes came across well. You know, I mean, he's a sharp guy who has charisma, can play a lot of different roles, and I think that came across there. But I don't know what the hook is for him yet, and he needs to have one. But I'm not criticizing him not showing it in a 14-second or 40-second skit, I should say, on SmackDown tonight. Go ahead, Sean.
Yeah, I agree. I wanted to say first, I know I actually was on – I got on the little YouTube when Nick and Tom, you'll get to hear that, the BF Universe, I'll get to hear that this weekend. But I told Nick, I was like, Nick from Brattleboro finally called the other week. Like, he finally called. Like, he's alive. He's still here.
Yes.
So that was cool to hear, get his reaction on that. But going to what do you guys think about, too, going back to NXT stuff? And I'm excited about SmackDown for many reasons. One, because of Cameron Grimes, see what they do with him. Two is obviously Grayson Waller and Brad. He's even more excited than I am, and I was pretty excited about Grayson Waller, but he's even more excited than I am. I'm really pumped to see what he does. And then Pretty Deadly. What do you guys think about Pretty Deadly? Do you think there's any chance there's some good stuff for them on SmackDown? Because I think the tag teams they need more tag teams, more good tag teams. And I think they fit really good in the WWE system. How do you – on the main roster, how do you think they're going to do? I'm excited to see what they can do on the main roster.
I am too. I think they can go there's a chance they end up, for people who are fans of theirs, and they're angry because they're just – I'm trying to think of an AEW comparison, not Dark Order. I mean, the Acclaim doesn't work, but – because they're tag champs. Like, the best case scenario for them is sort of tag champs, like you claimed, where they're very gimmicky, but they're good in the ring, and they catch on, and they get a big crowd response, and they're booked, they're protected in the booking. But there's another way they can go, which is more late-stage Fandango, Tyler Breeze, and I fear that's the case. I think there's enough to their act, and they are all in on it, and they're athletic, and I think they can have really good matches on the WWE scale. So I'm there's such a wide range of what could happen to them because of their gimmick that I'm hesitant to make a prediction on it. I think it's very, very wide ranging. And I have not heard internally how Vince McMahon or Paul Levesque feel about them. And even how they feel now might not matter, because if they think they're a lower card comedy act that are there to do jobs and just be colorful, the crowd reacts to them. You know, it might be like LA Knight. They drop them out a couple of weeks. They're like, oh, we got to reverse course. They're over. So, but it could go the other way, too. Brandon, do you have any kind of knowledge of their act, or what have you seen of them?
Yeah, I mean, when you've got a gimmick like theirs, I think that you're kind of there's rarely an in between with acts like that in WWE. Either you catch on in a big way and you get a corresponding push within your division. Take like the Acclaimed, like you mentioned, Wade, as the example of that. The other side of the coin is that you don't really catch on. And you become, even if you're booked in a serious way, you just sort of feel out of place. And my example for that would be the Viking Raiders. Like, they're a good in-ring act. They can give you good matches. They're featured on television. But they never really feel like a serious contender to do anything significant, because I think their act is outlandish and it never caught on. So it's really a matter of how Pretty Deadly comes across to the audience. Obviously, their gimmick is nothing like the Viking Raiders. My fear is just that it can be the type of gimmick that could lend itself to getting the subdued or sort of lackadaisical reactions that the Viking Raiders do, and then they just feel like they're kind of floundering around.
Has there been an act that's given, well, maybe Liv Morgan, who's been given as many vignettes and reboots? Lacey Evans too, with no benefit in terms of crowd reaction afterwards. I mean, all these vignettes that they put in and all these things, it is kind of like Lacey Liv and the Raiders come to mind. Does anyone else, Brandon?
That's a good list. I mean, no, probably not.
Yeah. All right, Sean, back to you.
Yeah, Lacey Evans. Ugh. Yeah. She had a chance back like 3 years ago, 4 years ago, and that was gone. That's gone. The two main things I was going to ask you were, hopefully I haven't talked too much about them because they're not necessarily the main picture. The first thing I was going to say, too, is the crowd was just, oh, man, it's fun when you get to see hot crowds like that. And just it makes the show, like we said, so much better. And it was just such a good show because the crowd was just so into everything. It was just – it was wonderful to see that. And the way they came in, the entrances were really cool. That was different, so I like that too. But with bummed when the OC came back as a unit, I was really bummed about it because I was – you know, I've been excited to see AJ to see what he's going to do these last few years that he's going to be on the main roster. And I just want him by himself. I just really do. I think the last few years, I think he could have some really good matches. What do you think the future is for AJ? I know he's on SmackDown, so that's another fun thing about SmackDown coming up. But I just, him at the OC, I think this bogs him down. I just don't think it helps him in any way. Where do you think his upside is his next, the little bit he's got left? Like, do you think he's got any chance of, you know, getting against Roman somehow? Or where do you think they're going with AJ?
Brandon, you first.
Yeah, I'm with you, Sean. I sort of groaned when Gallows and Anderson came back. Nothing against those guys. I think they've been given a lot of chances on the main roster. I don't think it's ever worked out particularly well. And I think that their association with AJ does more to hurt him than it does help him. It's one thing that I'm often really critical of a lot of what AEW is doing on television right now and still am, but one thing that I think they do particularly better than WWE is allow a significant division or separation within their factions if it benefits a storyline. So, for example, if Kenny Omega – or I'll give you a better one. Let's go with Bryan Danielson when he was in the feud with MJF. The Blackpool Combat Club was not really involved in that angle in any way. We still knew that Bryan was associated with the BCC, but they weren't coming out to help him. He wasn't cutting promos alongside them. He was very much his own man. And WWE seems hesitant to do that kind of stuff with their stables, with their factions. So I'd be more inclined to be okay with Gallows and Anderson being accompanied by AJ if they were inclined to let Styles have his own high-profile main event feuds that don't involve the OC, and then let him return to the OC when the story benefits that pairing. But they don't tend to do that. They tend to keep their stables together at all times. And I think by doing that, you're limiting the upside of Styles, especially as he winds his career down.
There's so much about Styles when Anderson and Gallows come out, which is Styles earned the right to have his friends hang out with him. And they're not over, and we're all tired of him. But AJ wants it, and whatever makes him happy, he's earned it. Like, there's a little bit of that vibe, and they're not – They're not making any effort to get Gallows and Anderson over as distinctive characters. They're going out and doing the same, going through the motions thing that they've been doing for a long time. Some of the stuff that Bryan Danielson said on Dynamite this week to Kenny Omega, it isn't, you know, 2019 anymore. With Gallows and Anderson, yeah, it's not, you know, whatever, 2017 anymore. So there's a little bit of that, and I don't think we're alone or in the minority when it comes to that vibe. As far as AJ goes, I don't rule out anything. I mean, it's like Ray's not being protected in terms of finishes of matches, but he's being featured a lot, and he's getting huge crowd responses. And you can argue if they protected him more with finishes, they maybe could do more with him, but he's sort of, you know, Teflon in the sense of people are just going to like him right. No matter how he does in the ring. With AJ, I think you do need to protect his credibility. I think his popularity isn't his charm and charisma as much as it was his ring work and just how rock solid awesome he was in everything that he did in the ring and having, you know, I said this about Jerry Lynn, you know, like so many wrestlers' best matches of their careers were against him. And AJ's, you know, on that list too. And so can AJ wrestle his way back into being a contender to Roman? Yes. Do I think they're going to do that on a big pay-per-view scale? I lean against it. I think we are past that point with him, but If some of his slowing down was just injuries and wear and tear and there's some time off and getting, you know, if he's in better condition and can kind of go back to having a little bit of that spark and spring in his step again, you know, the crowd's going to react and management's going to note it and Reigns might want to work with him. So I'm not ruling it out.
But even like, Wade, when you bring that up, the idea of positioning Styles for a feud with Roman, even if it's at a B-level pay-per-view, which I think is certainly more likely. Like when I look at that and I think, okay, typically the Usos and Solo Sikoa get involved with whomever Roman Reigns is feuding with. So just like my own personal preference, and I don't know that I'd be alone in this, I would find it more intriguing to watch Styles battle the Bloodline on his own than I would be interested in seeing Gallows and Anderson simultaneously feud with the Usos. Like that does nothing for me.
Sean, yeah, back to you. Any response to any of that?
No, I mean, those are all fair points. I mean, I don't see AJ getting to that, I guess, that high level just because I think it's just age is working against him at this point. But I still, you know, he's just one of my favorites, and I think he could still go in the ring. I think he could still have really good matches with top guys, but I just think they have him in a spot, and they might bring him up a little bit, but I don't see him going to, like, a super high threshold necessarily. But I'm interested to see what they do with him. And the last thing I was going to bring up was, or the last thing I was going to say just about the main event, not the main event. I think it should be the main event, Cody and Brock, but I will say I'm very intrigued by the match.
I got top billing graphically tonight.
That's true.
Yeah.
Because I was torn too. There's many ways they could have gone with this pay per view, but I thought, well, Cody and Brock still has to be the main event because it's Cody and it's Brock. And the one thing I will say too, I wanted to bring this up, Wade, because you brought this up last week. They should have had an explanation of why Brock did what he did. I'm sorry. Like, I'm gonna be into the match because Brock, you know, Cody wants revenge and. That's fine, but to me, when you just attack somebody and you don't tell anybody why you did it, I mean, that just doesn't make any sense to me. Like, that was a negative part, I will say that. But the main question I was
Sean, we might get, I mentioned this earlier in the show, we might get a development on that tomorrow night. You know, I mean, Cody brought it up. I don't think he'd bring it up if they want us to forget that they haven't done it. Could be Cody going into business for himself, or maybe they just want to own it, even if they don't ever explain it because Brock is mysterious. But there's a chance we're going to get an angle tomorrow night that actually answers it. So, again, not to make too many things wait and see, but we are midstream on this. The match hasn't happened, and that could reveal itself. I just want to throw that in there.
I hope you're right. Going back to one quick thing about the Cross-Nakamura match, which I brought up last week that – I thought Nakamura would win. I thought the match was actually pretty good for what it was. I mean, it wasn't, you know, five-star, of course, but it was very good. With Shinsuke going to Raw, I don't see a lot of upside for him there. I just think Cody's going to be the main star. If Shinsuke stays babyface, I just don't see him getting up to the high level. And it's, you know, his own doing. He didn't really want to get to that level in some ways. But part of it was they didn't book him very well at the beginning. He could have been a lot more initially. And he got to a certain point, and they kind of just brought him back down. I'm kind of torn because I almost feel like, as much as I don't like Cross, I almost think he should win because I think if they think higher of him at some point, like they should be able to go and see what's possible with him. I don't think that much is possible, but I think he's younger and has more upside in the sense of he can go higher on a card than maybe Shinsuke can right now. So I wanted to hear what you thought about the match, what you think is, you know, Shinsuke can be on Raw, because I just don't know if he can go very high. And Wade, I was going to say, I messaged you obviously today, but as much as it's probably under Todd's control, he probably had no control over it. He's the heel. He should have had the show. We should have been listening to the fix today, Wade. We should have been listening to the fix, but it's all good. We will listen to it when it's due time. You're the man. Yeah.
Thanks. We did address it at the top of the fix because Todd on the way back from Dynamite Wednesday night was the victim of a hit and run accident, and he just wasn't in any shape to do a show on Thursday. So.
Are you serious?
Yeah, he's fine. I mean, he did the show. He's fine. But, yeah, okay. Star was total. He. So it was, Todd does not skip Thursdays for the fix. He travels. Like, he's been on – he's done the fix on, like, three different continents on Thursdays. He finds a way to make it happen. But, yeah, he was seeing doctors and stuff on Thursday from the fallout from the accident.
gosh. Well, I'm glad he's
okay. So
who's
still now?
For sure. No one. Oh, gosh. I am. Oh, man. I'm at the message hot and say, I am so sorry. I feel awful now. Oh, my gosh. I am a horrible human being. I apologize. But no,
I love it.
I'm glad to get to hear it. But, Wade, you're the best. Seriously, Brandon, it's always fun talking to you, and I appreciate you guys taking my call from those.
Thanks, Sean. Appreciate it. I enjoyed being able to drop that piece of info for Sean.
I knew it was coming.
Yes. All right. Up next, Ryan in Cumberland, Maryland. Ryan, what's on your mind about SmackDown tonight?
I have a question about some Michael Cole said about Selena Vega, about her uncle getting retired by Bruno Sammartino. I guess Bruno messed him up so bad that he never wrestled again. Was Bruno known to do that to some of the wrestlers back in the day? Did you catch that when Michael Cole said that?
I did not catch that. You know what? We didn't even answer the Shinsuke Cross question. When Sean does his sign-off, sometimes we forget his last question. So let's put a pin in that. Remember to do that. What did Cole say? Repeat that, because I didn't hear it, but I want to hear a little bit more about it since I don't recall it.
Especially Selena Vega's uncle was a wrestler. I guess he was pretty high on the card if he was wrestling Bruno Sammartino. I don't know if it's a WWF match or not. They didn't specify, but they said he wrestled Bruno, and Bruno messed him up pretty bad, and he never wrestled against that. I wondered if there's like a story behind that.
I don't know the story behind that. Do you, Brandon?
No, I don't know the story. I did hear Cole say it. He specifically said that he broke Zelina's uncle's nose, and that's he decided that he wouldn't wrestle anymore after that.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know the background. I don't know the backstory on that. Sorry. It's not unusual for you to stump us, but you stumped us on that one.
All right. My second question is on the Nakamura Cross match. Cross was saying about taking away the honor. I shouldn't say Nakamura. How do you think he was going to do that? Make him, like, tap out maybe? Or was he going to maybe try to make him cheat, like a low blow or something else?
Yeah, I was. I almost rewound to rewatch, like, the buildup to that moment. And it wasn't a long vignette. And I ended up not doing it. I was wondering the same thing. Like, and the problem with Cross is a lot of what he does is, like, spooky for effect with platitudes and big words and mysterious phrases. And it's kind of the Aleister Malachi Black thing, or even Bray Wyatt, where it's just like, it just feels repeatedly empty, and it's just all sizzle, no steak. So I didn't spend a lot of time thinking about it after I was like, should I rewind? Nah, it's just Karrion Kross and platitudes. I'm going to take away your honor. I mean, I think they're doing a better job with Cross now, trying to have a little bit of, I don't say logic, but something sequential leading to why he picks opponents with the cards and stuff. But it still feels sort of half there and half not, and it's mostly just for the visual spooky and mysteriousness of it. Brandon, where are you on the presentation of Cross and Scarlett in general, and then specifically the Nakamura thing? Do you have any insight or ideas on that?
Yeah, I thought, much like you, that it was just sort of something he said for the sake of saying it, because it sounded kind of spooky. It is very Bray Wyatt-esque. There just isn't much to the words. I mean, Bray Wyatt basically promises to murder every opponent he has, and we know how that turns out. So, I didn't read too much into it. I did notice that Michael Cole was very insistent on repeating the line last week about the idea that Cross doesn't hurt any of his opponents. He's never hurt anyone. It's the cards that do it.
Yeah.
So they're really leaning into the whole card thing, like picking his future opponents and the people that he's going to attack. It just doesn't feel like it is working all that well. I mean, it feels very mid-card. I did note that on a show that was just littered with massive star reactions top to bottom from the crowd, Crosses was probably the most subdued of the night, maybe even more so than the Viking Raiders. And I mean, if you're not out or besting the Viking Raiders in crowd reactions, I mean, that's not a great sign for where you're at I thought the match was fine. Like I thought he and Shinsuke had an okay match, better than I typically would expect. So that was fine. But yeah, I thought Shinsuke getting the win was the right move. And yeah, I don't see much in Cross.
Yeah, I don't see a lot in Cross either. I like this version better than the other main roster WWE versions. But, you know, I mean, all along, I mean, I was told by wrestlers, like, he's not going to get over on the main roster the way he wrestles in NXT. He's got, maybe there were injuries, he was nursing order, but if you can't take bumps and you can't have that give and take, or you choose not to protect your character, but you're not big enough to justify it on the main roster when you're just basically average size. I mean, if you line everybody up height-wise, I mean, I think he'd be somewhere in the middle third. You know, I mean, it's not like he's an outlier. So, yeah, I don't know. I think he's slotted okay, but do you want somebody who you give that kind of character development to, such as it is, as flawed as it is, if he's just going to be jobbing? I'm glad Shinsuke is higher on their priority list right now, because I think you can do more with Shinsuke. But I mean, I'm not saying cut Cross, but I don't know. It was a weird match to have. And you know, the idea is when wrestlers, the pattern, I should say, not the idea, the pattern with WWE is that if a wrestler is leaving your brand, they lose. And if they're arriving on your brand, they win. And Shinsuke is moving to Raw. And Cole brought that up. And
it felt very much like they were more concerned with sending Nakamura off on a high note than reestablishing anything for Cross, who's staying on SmackDown. I do think too, like now that we're talking about Cross and Shinsuke, what Sean was bringing up, the idea of Shinsuke kind of getting lost on Raw because of Cody Rhodes. I think if Rhodes is not going to challenge for that new Raw title, which seems like a strong possibility, that it's very possible that we get more of like a Codyverse situation over on Raw, where he's kind of doing his own thing for a while. And that would really open up the title picture for guys like Shinsuke Nakamura to potentially be involved there. And the way that they have presented Nakamura since his return seems to indicate to me that they want to give it another shot with him at a position higher than he's been recently.
All right. Ryan, back to you. I got nothing to add.
My final question for you is, with that crowd being so hot, is there a reason why wrestling in Puerto Rico has sort of fallen off from what it was in the 80s? Was it the Bruiser Brody murder, or not that Carlos's sons weren't maybe not into as much as what Carlos was into as a wrestler? There's something else going on there.
It's sort of a territory that lost its top star, Carlos Colon, and didn't really develop a new star. And it seems, when you look at the crowd tonight, it seems like a huge lost opportunity for pro wrestling to not have gone there more often. I'm not an expert on Puerto Rico. I don't know if there's, economic or regulation or arena issues that kind of just steered companies away from going there. But, you know, I mean, AEW's got to look at this and be like, maybe we should go there. I mean, obviously there have to be metrics, there has to be TV, and you know, obviously, you know, Tony Khan did his research on the UK and they know what markets they're in. But it feels like a right market right now. You can burn out a right market if you go there too much too soon, and you know, the novelty can wear off. So, you know, I'm not just guaranteeing that they're going to, you know, do as well again as they did this time, but. Yeah, I mean, it does. I'm thinking about this weekend and what we saw tonight, and I think people would tune in to a show or a pay-per-view, PLE, if they heard it's in Puerto Rico, based on what we saw tonight. Like, I think Puerto Rico is a drawing card in the United States for people to watch, because it's so fun. It's like, well, oh, Punk's in Chicago, MJF's in Long Island. Something special is going to happen. The crowd's going to be super into it.
I thought what was really cool about this show was the fact that going into this weekend, I really felt like they sort of almost had to main event with Damian Priest and Bad Bunny, because Bad Bunny is such a star there, and this show has been so centrally focused around his involvement, and they've gone so heavy-handed in the promotion of the LWO and everything going on with Rey Mysterio and Dominic. it just felt like, you know, deservedly or not, that that would probably close the show. And I don't necessarily even disagree that, that headlining with that would be a bad idea. But coming out of tonight, man, it felt like they could do really whatever they wanted. I mean, for as big of a star as Bad Bunny is, everyone on that show that, that was involved in a main event angle was incredibly over. Bad Bunny got an incredible reaction, but I didn't get the sense that there would be any disappointment or come down or anything like that with the crowd if they went with Rhodes and Lesnar over Bad Bunny.
Yeah, it got – and it, I mean, I think it got top billing in the graphic presentation on SmackDown tonight. And so, yeah, I mean – I don't think you can do Bad Bunny right before Cody Lesnar. I think you have to have a buffer match, a come down match. Maybe you open the show with it, like they opened with the LWO entrance. But I could see either going on. I mean, you can do Bloodline and Riddle, Sammy, and KO. By the way, we don't forget. Did Riddle come across a little different tonight than usual to you?
I mean, maybe like a little bit.
I'll elaborate. It seemed like he was somewhere else. Rehearsing, like imitating Riddle instead of into it. And I can't put my finger on it, but it just felt like, you know, he was just imitating, it was some derivative imitation of Riddle, just kind of going through the motions, and it didn't seem like he was that into it. So I don't know.
My initial reaction when you posed the question was, is the weed different there? But I don't know.
Yeah, maybe for some reason he didn't smoke it.
Yeah. he couldn't get it over the border, so he just jumped
it. I don't know what the laws are in Puerto Rico.
I'm not sure.
Yeah. So anyway, let's see. I guess we're ready to move on. Let's bring Javier on to the show. I missed the jingle. Let's do the jingle. Here it is. Javier's preview of Backlash is posted right now at pwtorch.com. You can get his analysis, backstory on the matches, predictions. Javier Machado, welcome.
Hey, Wade. Hey, Brandon. How's it going, guys?
Good. Good to hear from you. I appreciate your translations, messaging me the Spanish translations. I was thinking that would be nice. We did not I did not have time to add them to my report, but it helped add a little context. Nothing surprised me though.
Javier, you'll be happy to know that as I was sitting there watching the opening promo of SmackDown, I was thinking in my head, "Where's Javier when I need him?"
I felt really bad not being around for Monday because Monday had the one from Breeze. My brother texted me and was like, are you going to be on the call to translate? I'm like, I wish they were, but, you know. I got to pick up on something that Brad said, that he said Chris, if Chris's Judgment Day opens the show, he's, you know, somewhere in the middle. I guess that makes me Roman Reigns. I got the best entrance music. Close out
That's
the show,
right.
And I've worked out a contract where I'm on limited engagement.
Yes, totally.
You can't see me, but I'm throwing the one up.
Thanks, man. I everything you guys said, I pretty much agree. Also, I will have to also like co-sign everything that Brad said, because if you remember, Wade, when I co-hosted with you, which is, I think, when they unveiled the belt, one of the biggest concerns I had was, what are they going to do, you know, with it being in Saudi Arabia and Roman Reigns being involved in the show, how do you, like, book the order of the matches? Because the winner of that title should go on last, and there's no way that Roman Reigns is going to go on last. So if Roman Reigns goes on last and the title's, like, early on the show, you're already, like, you know, co-signing it. And so when they said that both Raw and SmackDown, I'm like, well, I think Roman's going to be involved. I think it's very likely at this point that he's going to be involved. And as a matter of fact, I think that what ends up happening is one of the Usos or Solo Sikoa wins the match, and then Roman demands the contract to further you know, like, you know, so like, wait, you know, I won this. You really want, you know, to create more of a more schism there. And I think it makes sense because that might be WWE's way of trying to have their cake and eat it too, by basically having at some point Cody beat Roman Reigns for the title that he actually wants. And I understand your concern, Brandon, about, you know, you don't want Roman to lose, but if their intent is for Roman to basically hold on to the belt for like another 1,000 days beyond that, mm-hmm. I think you end up building up that equity, you know, you end up building back that equity, that the, you know, that he'll lose by losing. Not to mention that he's already lost, okay, two times and has one draw since he's been champion. One of them is actually, they're actually like pushing as it being a loss, which was at Royal Rumble 2022 when he lost to Seth Rollins by disqualification because he couldn't beat, because the story that they're telling is that he couldn't beat Seth Rollins and so got frustrated and got himself disqualified. And then that's kind of been like what Seth Rollins has been, you know, going on about, saying that, you know, he couldn't deal with me, so he, you know, he took me out because Rollins kept coming, you know, no matter what he did, Rollins kept kicking out of everything. Do you want to take a wild guess who the other two people that he lost it are?
Brandon.
I know that he lost to Baron Corbin, but I thought that was before the
that
title.
Was before. That was before.
Win.
Yeah, it was before the title.
Okay. Yeah, then no, I'm not sure.
Yeah, I don't know.
King Woods.
Oh, God.
Yeah. By disqualification.
Yeah.
And Adam Pearce, which was not technically a loss, but it was a no contest draw.
Oh, my God. I'm not counting disqualifications, by the way. I mean, yeah. No, that's not really the spirit. I mean, you're right, Javier, but no one is going, oh, Reigns lost to Seth by DQ, so it, like, that's a I mean, I know they're telling the story a little bit about that, but I don't like babyfaces bragging about DQ wins anyway.
It's semantics, you know, but like in this case, the fact that, because I went back and read a really good report by Brandon LeClaire to refresh my memory of the match, where that was the story they were telling, that and remember, Roman hadn't been like the legend of Roman hadn't exploded to the level where it is now. Mm-hmm. You know, so it was the story that he could not bring him down. You know, he was kicking out of everything. It was like one of those stories where he like where Rollins was like on another level in terms of like his resilience. So I think they're trying to capture that. So. So yeah, in general, I agree, but you know, it is the way for a babyface to say, "Hey, look, you know, he just couldn't hang, so he took me out, and so I just because I mean, Rollins has been saying that I deserve another shot. He's not saying that like, you know, hey, I'm you know, he's not resting on his laurels to say that. He is using look, I deserve another shot against Roman.
My memory says Seth might have been bragging a little more than he should have about it, but I could. Maybe my memory is letting me down, but I feel like Seth, like, I beat you, Roman, I'll beat you again. It's like, okay.
I'm more inclined to agree with your first point about the idea that if Reigns can overcome taking an actual loss, if the plan is to keep this title on him, like, essentially forever. Name some far-off date in the future. I think that changes the narrative and the conversation a little bit, but yes, I do still think it's a big problem if, for example, somebody beats him, he wins this Raw title, somebody beats him at SummerSlam, and then like Cody beats him in Philadelphia next year.
Javier?
For which title? Sorry, because I lost track.
So what I'm saying is like your first point about the idea that he can overcome that loss if he's holding the title for another 2 years or 2 years plus.
Yes.
My concern is if like say he loses to someone like Seth Rollins at SummerSlam, right? So you get Rollins his win, you get the Raw title on Seth. Roman retains his Universal title, and then he goes on to lose the Undisputed title to Cody Rhodes at next year's WrestleMania. That I would have an issue with.
I agree with you on that one. And that's the thing is, like, if you do end up with Cody getting his win, because that way you have Cody overcoming Roman Reigns, not ideal because he's not winning, like, the overall thing. Reigns is still, you know, right, coming away with something. So instead of getting all the Roman equity, he's only getting some of it. Not the most ideal either. But at that point, you know, really, who's next? At that point, you really don't have anybody else next, and you just end up running through people until, like, you know, a Braun Breaker or whoever your next guy, you know, babyface, off in theory, right, Wade? you know, when they're ready, you know what I mean?
I've never made Todd Martin quite as happy as when I sided with him on Austin Theory over.
Yes, and the official nickname for Austin Theory in the picks is your boy Austin Theory.
I'm not saying this is the best. This is like what I would want in the best situation, but like this is what. Yeah. Makes the most sense based on the pieces that are on the board right now for me. What makes the most sense that they might be thinking of doing. So not necessarily what I would, you know, I would prefer. I mean, I would prefer them not bringing up that belt. So, but that ship has sailed.
Yeah. Yeah. What do you think of the twist of the belt, the SmackDown participation in the Raw title tournament?
Well, I mean, let me back up. I try to find out why someone would make a decision. What are the logical, even if it's illogical to me, what their logic is. And, you know, or like, for example, you complain a lot about the wrestler not kicking out at three when the other tag team partner interferes, and not the wrestler, but the referee not counting to three when the shoulders are up, but that's because the referee has to reestablish control of the match the moment there's an interference.
No, the match is over. No, if you count three, the match is over. There's no need to restore order because there's still a wrestler laying on top of another wrestler whose shoulders are down. Just because the wrestler on top got hit in the back doesn't mean that the pin isn't
the
still happening
illegal,
because there's a guy on top of someone whose shoulders are down on the mat. Yes, having
the moment something illegal,
we've lost control.
We have to reestablish control, and then and we can go beyond that because, I mean, you know, at that point, if he does it again, then the disqualification happens, and that's why, you know, you remember a while back Corey Graves said that you only get one. Break.
One save, yeah.
Yeah, one save, and that was the question. It's like, well, the idea is because once there's a save, the wrestler's in there illegally, the referee should say, you know, if you do this again, you're disqualified, and if he does it again, then, you know, that's why you only get the one save. But, you know,
the overriding rule, Javier, is if your shoulders are down and your opponent is covering you, no matter what else is going on, I don't care if someone spills their popcorn in the third row, the ref doesn't have to restore order on that any more than he has to restore order because somebody enters the ring illegally, count to three, and then scold the wrestler.
By that logic, then the Viking Raiders doing the double pin is perfectly fine.
No, because when a save is made, I had to think for a second, but no, when the save is made, it's a wrestler representing the person whose shoulders are pinned, hitting the person going for the pin. That's completely different than two people pinning someone else at once. On a serious note, I mean, I know you're playing a little bit here, but when you're giving an advantage to somebody who's cheating by not finishing the third count. But with the Viking Raiders, you're giving advantage to cheaters by finishing the count. And my point is there should be a logic to the way the referees enforce the rules. The spirit of the rules should be enforced if at all possible. And it's clearly possible here to do so. With the Raiders, the rule is get out of the ring, one guy in the ring at a time, during a pin. If someone interferes but someone's still getting pinned, you can finish the third count.
Yeah, but, And I agree that it's not been clean for the longest period of time because you still have a referee counting while the other two wrestlers are wrestling inside the ring. The pin should happen when the ring is clear and there are no other wrestlers in the ring at all. So that's where the logical, I mean, it breaks in other parts. But, you know, from, you know, this is the old, like the really old school, that's kind of like how they, you know, I remember it being explained, you know, way back then, that, you know, that, you know, you have to have, you know, the wrestlers, the referee is acting more, you know, it may not be fair because, you know, someone's cheating, but, you know, you have to restore order before that. They've just never been consistent in their application of it. So, because that's one of those things where, like, as wrestling evolves, we forget, like, you know, why wrestlers, you know, hit the ropes. And I think was it on the Fix that you guys talked about that?
Yeah.
It was you, right, Wade, where you're talking about where it's, you know, the wrestler gets thrown into the ropes.
Todd said he didn't like it. And Todd said that was one of the things he just can't, you know, he has to, like, get over. And I'm like, well, if wrestlers actually worked harder to swing opponents into the ropes, you would believe that, you know, that there's a spring factor that requires that, you know, they'd, I can buy into it if wrestlers actually look like they're swinging someone hard into the ropes, but too often wrestlers are super duper lazy about it.
Yeah, but even
but anyway,
like
you had
bouncing. But even the bouncing back of it is like, you know, they're not. It's not like the ropes are necessarily. You know, he lost control. He hit the ropes and then it pushed them back. It's, you know, he turns around and then, you know, sees, you know, regains his you know, the wrestler regains their positioning of where the other wrestler is. And goes towards that, which is why sometimes the wrestler would drop down because they're trying to trick the other person, you know. So that whole thing has a psychology to it running the ropes.
Yeah.
It's just that, you know, it's something that you don't remember and you just do it by rote without really knowing why people do that, you know, which is why I think a lot of wrestlers just whip someone into the rope without the force to do that, which, you know, defeating the purpose of it.
Yeah, yeah. I still think the simplest rule is if you're about to hit the mat a third time and the shoulders are down and someone else is on top of them, no matter what else is going on that might bother your lack of order in the ring, take the extra split second to hit your hand the third time, don't reward the people interfering, and then fine, suspend, and scold them afterwards.
I mean, that would be the fair way to do it.
That's my point. That's our journey. Our journey is that would be the fair, obvious way to handle it.
Yeah, I mean that's my point, because you're looking from the point of view, what would be the most fair? And I agree with you, that would be the most fair. But I'm telling you, what I'm saying is that the logic of why, if they were to explain it to you, that would be the reason they would explain it.
Right,
you know,
and I would say,
like,
the same thing in response, which is that's really dumb.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
don't
yeah,
do it.
It's
that,
tough.
That,
I agree.
Do, that, that's
I,
bad
I
logic.
Agree with that part.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's the thing. I'm not saying whether it's good or bad. I'm saying that it exists. But all that was to say that I don't think there was any logic to the SmackDown Raw thing, to having SmackDown and Raw. That made no, I mean, and pretty much for everything you said. Like, you're risking. Because you only have two options at this point. If a wrestler from SmackDown wins it and he goes to Raw, you just lost, like you said, a high level pick, most likely, over to Raw. Your other option is that the SmackDown wrestler brings the title with them, in which case you defeated the purpose of having a new title for Raw,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yep.
So
totally.
It just, you know, and I'll even throw in a third option. Now they could jump between brands. Well, then why not let Roman Reigns jump between brands? You know, it again, it's kind of like there is no real good reason for it. So, I cannot come up even with bad logic to explain you know, the whole thing.
Yeah, we'll see how it plays out, but it is just palm. The forehead, like, seriously, you create a title.
Yeah.
It's gonna be you have the whole purpose of the draft is you wherever Roman ends up, the new belt's gonna go on the other brand. Roman's on SmackDown, the other belt's on Raw, and now a SmackDown wrestler can win it. And do they get transferred then to exclusive property of Raw, or do they walk around like Bianca on SmackDown with the Raw belt until further notice?
That's something we haven't discussed yet, and I was trying to think of a viable solution to that because, man, I really don't want to see them do, like, the segment in the ring again where they swap titles reluctantly. That was so bad. And, I mean, still gets talked about as a really, really low point in the draft era. I mean, it was just bad television. It was bad creative. There was no logical reason for them to want to switch titles. It gives up the legacy. And now, especially where you have Bianca Belair coming up on, you know, a record of being the longest modern running champion, why would she want to switch her title just because she switched brands? Do either of you think that there's a possibility that rather than go that direction, they just rename these titles to kind of essentially to bring them in line with what they do with the world titles? I mean, even when they were on separate shows before Roman Reigns held both of them, there was the Universal and the WWE.
I don't know what names work, you know, that have parallel construction. Then they have to get out. I guess they could get out the spray paint and just paint the Raw belt blue and put scotch tape or masking tape.
They've done it like with the, they've done it with the men's titles in the past where it's been WWE Championship and World Heavyweight Championship.
Yeah,
I mean, you could do WWE Women's Champion and World Women's Champion or Women's World Champion.
Yeah, I mean, you can, and
it's not great, but it's better.
No, I know. I just want an idea that they had something in mind before they did this. They're not just trying to figure out what do we do now, because the thing we're going to do people don't like, and so is there another option?
Just don't put yourself in the position of having to swap belts again.
I know. Yeah, Javier?
Yeah, I like your idea, Brandon, of just naming them two different things and not calling them a SmackDown or Raw. On the primer, just to confuse people because of the stupidity of it, I kept referring Ripley as Raw SmackDown champion, and Belair as SmackDown's Raw champion. So highlight these.
And just finish your thought. Sorry, I was going to
highlight the stupidity of the whole thing.
And you also threw everybody off by naming Omos Olmos. You added an L to his name, which does not exist. Omos.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Whoops.
I always call him Omos, and you always call him Olmos, and I was like, well, I don't know. I mean, but everyone calls it a little different. But I didn't know you actually thought there was an L in there, though.
Yeah, I thought there was an L, and I've always written it that way.
I was thinking that was just a typo and Wade was giving you a hard time, but
no. No.
Oh, that's good.
I've always written that way. Every now and then I also catch myself adding E to Zane. So, you know, every now and then
catch that too. Well, because I'm not always the one posting your articles. And so I'm like, oh, geez. And then go back and edit them later.
And for some reason I can't catch the names. Well, you know, when I used to proofread like 7 times because I used to be panicking. I'm like, you know what, this has got to come in. Also, for some reason, I don't know if you have an issue with any of these words, Wade, but I always misspell determine. I always use M-A-I-N. I don't know if you have any words where you keep doing the same, you know, stupid thing and then get angry whenever you see the spell check. That's completely off topic.
No one's listening still. They're all gone.
We've
lost everybody.
The two people I think that there are going to be that just felt like they're being elevated. One is definitely Shinsuke beating Cross. But one thing I liked what they did with Cross at first was the idea that they actually gave him something. Like, you know, you guys were talking about Spooky Talk, but what he was essentially saying is that I take stuff from people, which, since he's essentially just going to be a gatekeeper anyway, a stepping stone for people to beat to go up to the next stage, by having that kind of thing, he doesn't lose as much if he's, like he says, taking something away from another wrestler. With Drew McIntyre, it was his, you know, he made him more, he basically became more reckless after wrestling him. with Mysterio. Was his patience is what finally made him snap on his son. I kind of dug that idea. Kind of like shot down because I was excited to see, okay, well, you know, this is what they're doing with him. And he said he's going to take away Shinsuke's honor. I'm really curious what they're going to do. Is he going to go too far with Shinsuke so that Shinsuke has to snap and cheat, and like maybe we're going to get a more, you know, a change in Shinsuke to, but they didn't do anything. Then, you know, and obviously Shinsuke's now off to Raw. So unless they're going to have Karrion Kross jump over to Raw to feud with him in a continual, you know, in our first crossover 1 week into the draft, into the post draft, it's, I kind of like disappointed they didn't really follow up on that. But if they give him like something like that, at least it's something, you know, something that he can have. So yeah.
Well, the issue, Javier, was that they like the things that he said about McIntyre and Mysterio, they retrofit going back. Like once they decided, like, okay, this is Cross's gimmick now, they retrofit things that happened to McIntyre and Mysterio that allowed him to say those things, but now he's saying something new about Shinsuke that hasn't happened yet, and they just don't have that plan for Shinsuke, so it just gets to sit out there.
Yeah, I mean, which is why I was like upset when nothing happened, because yeah, I mean, I
right.
Saw the retrofit because like, you know, a lot of angles. I mean, even the I'm 90% sure that the whole Fiend going after the people who wronged him ended up being a happy coincidence, because the one that did not fit was when the Fiend was basically taking out people. The one that did not fit was Kurt Angle. Kurt Angle, he had no beef with Kurt Angle, so that was retroactively, you know, add to saying, oh, I looked up to you in my youth and you disappointed me. So that's kind of they explained that. But all the other people were just like happy accidents. It was, Kane and McFoley and you know, basically a bunch of people that he actually did have history with Kurt Angle being the odd man out. But yeah, I mean, I'm fine with retrofitting, and you know, if it creates a direction for him, which is why I was excited, because it felt like, hey, Karrion Kross is gonna have a direction now. He's gonna be picking people, you know, and being a factor for change, which is again another good thing for other wrestlers who are at a specific level on the card, because then, you know, going through him, that could be, you know, not only beating would elevate them, just but also change their character into something that more fits the new level that they're going to go to. So I was kind of like, you know, this could be interesting, but you know, like I said, Brandon, they just didn't do anything with Shinsuke. So.
Yeah,
which is weird. So, and the other person, the other one that kind of felt was elevated was the OC beating the Viking Raiders. That felt like it was an elevation of AJ Styles himself, because I think we are going to end up seeing AJ Styles and Roman Reigns and the Gallows and Anderson versus the Usos, which I'm fine with, as long as they don't go into the whole Scott Hall, Kevin Nash, and their reputation, which is like essentially what the characters that they're constantly playing, the whole Good Brother stuff. And instead they go a little bit, you know, into like their earlier days where they're more like, you know, just killers and like mercenaries kind of thing, cut away from the whole, you know, Good Brothers and let's go have some beer, brewskis and stuff like that. And speaking in wrestler speak, I think if they could harness that and let AJ Styles take center stage, I like that kind of the way that the LWO is there just to basically back up Mysterio. Mysterio is still really the star of the story. If they're just there to back up AJ Styles, I'm fine with it.
Yeah. I don't know, like when guys are just appendages and you're not doing character development, I mean, I guess sometimes you can justify it's not worth the TV time, but I don't know. I got just a lot of TV time. Give us something to care about. that single soundbite sums up my entire feelings on the OC as a stable. Just, yeah. Yeah. Yep.
I started watching the Bullet Club stuff like after they were done. and I've been waiting to see them. You know, when they showed up in WWE, I'm still waiting for them to do something like, you know, what was promised from the good old days. I was hoping for something. I mean, they almost got there on Impact, not quite. You know, just about that we're getting there. That's when they left. I'm still kind of waiting, which is why I guess I'm an optimist, hoping that this would be, you know, a return to an actual, you know, decent form. But, you know, we'll see.
We'll see. That's true. I mean, I have a prediction, but yeah.
And the last thing I got is basically, other than a complaint about Wade Barrett, is I really, really, really enjoyed the Cody video package that they did. I'm curious how you guys feel about these kind of video packages. To me, when you basically cut everything down and you just have, like, the highlights like that and you post it, like, you know, in the way they do, you know, with soundtrack and everything, it just gets me more psyched up for a match. I don't know if you know, because I know some people are like, oh, I don't care about that. But I'm like, that was my first, that's like one of my favorite things about Impact, is how they introduce the matches before they happen with those video packages. And, you know, Cody feels like is someone who's aware of that. So, like, it feels like all his promos are designed for them to be cut into these little, like, trailer montages.
Brandon, what do you think of the montage?
Yeah, I thought it was solid. And I mean, WWE is really, really good at that type of thing. And I think that, you know, you lean on your strengths, and video production has always been, and video production and presentation has always been one of their strengths. I think their video packages are really, really strong. And you know, there are promo packages for pay-per-view matches that I remember for years and years, almost even more than the match itself, because they're just so good and so effective. And if you put it to the right music, you know, it can be really dramatic and work in a really big way. It does. This is related and not so much a positive statement, but man, it felt like, I don't know if either of you picked up on this, but it felt like starting around the time that they did that segment tonight, the show kind of like slowed to a crawl for a bit there. They went really heavy-handed on the video packages and the backstage segments and the build-up and all of that stuff before they finally transitioned over to the main event. And I was a little disappointed because, like, the crowd had been so hot that I kind of wanted them to just, like, get another match out there to get a little bit more out of that crowd.
Are we ready to pick up on that?
Yeah, well, sort of, because I actually had to run out and do something. Because I think one of the things that they ran during that period was the Cameron Grimes thing, right?
It was, yeah. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. I actually missed it. I had to go back and watch it while I was waiting on the call. But you're right, because when I was trying to, like, scrub and find them, like, wow, there was a big, you know, gap of nothing really going on here. Cause I mean, it was, I think, yeah, because between the Shinsuke match and I think that was the next match, right?
After Shinsuke and Cross. Yeah.
So that was like a big, you know, that was like a huge segment of time. And I was like, you know, wow. But I did pick up on that, but I didn't notice it from the crowd's point of view, because I wasn't actually watching it live at that point.
Gotcha. Anything else, Javier?
Yeah, just that I'm upset at Wade Barrett. He spoiled Demon Slayer, something in Demon Slayer for me. You know, and that literally is the next anime on my watch list. As soon as I'm done with Bleach, I was going to start on Demon Slayer. And I'm like, and then he spoils it. I'm like, come on, seriously?
I wasn't paying attention, so I'm still good, unless you spoil it for me now.
I could just totally picture Wade watching anime.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's not real high on my watch list at the moment. So, but you know, there's a writer strike, so I might work my way to that.
I actually got to see Suzumi on the theaters. That's more of a Disney-esque kind of, you know, anime, you know, more whimsical, you know, kind of thing. And you know, heavily, it dealt a lot with the, the because it was the 14th anniversary of the earthquake in Japan, so that was heavily themed. Recommended for people who, you know, if it's playing in your area.
Cool. Anything else, Javier?
That was it. You already plugged my primer and also my typos and misspellings and almost.
Well, in your defense, I think Matt Riddle called him Omos, like, when he first showed up. And so, you know, some people have written it that way. But, yeah, and I mean, different people pronounce it different ways. But the L stuck with you. The L stuck with you, Javier.
Yeah, I might have done it right a few times when I caught myself, but I was just going off of my, you know, like how I pronounce it. So it's like, I got to now, yeah, like, drop the L, so... Get the L out. No, that doesn't have the same ring as get the F out. All right.
I'll add the L in solidarity in my report tomorrow.
I'm just kidding.
I won't. But
the editor's sitting right here, people.
Well, that's why I told you. I'm kidding.
Well, you hung me out there. Let it hang for a minute.
Wade, for an oldie, I use the Oxford comma, so.
Well, as should everyone. All the time. Only makes sense. What more is there to say?
This has just gone off the rails. So. Good night, guys.
Good night, Javier. All right. So, yeah, you know we're past 2 hours when that's where we go. To in-house editing comments. All right, Nick from Brattleboro's in the mailbag. He goes, this new championship is just getting more and more confusing. Rather than adding to the enjoyment of the product, this just seems to be weight around its neck. So they twist and turn to try to add logic to the situation. A Raw title, which will culminate in a match between a Raw and a SmackDown superstar, just ridiculous. They really seem to have painted themselves into a corner and are just flaying away. Sigh. Thanks for listening to my frustration and confusion. They should just have Roman win it and unify all the titles. Still can't rule that out. All right. So Dave from Boston email says, I hope life's treating you well. I'm a longtime listener of the Flagship and the Raw SmackDown post shows, but this is my first time emailing in. Well, thank you, Dave. Thanks for listening. Thanks for emailing. More people should follow in your footsteps, especially if you listen this long. You're a dedicated listener, so participate. On the Flagship this week, you mentioned that Roman is going to be at Night of Champions. I know that most people don't want to see Cody win the new Raw title because it'll feel like a consolation prize, and I understand that, but do you think there could be a storyline scenario where Paul Heyman pulls some strings to enter Roman into the tournament for the Raw title, and then he ends up in the finals with Cody? Now, what I love about this, Brandon, is he wrote this 12 minutes before SmackDown started. He said this, so in that context, WWE may look at this as a way to get Cody that big win against Roman on a big stage and possibly bring more credibility to that title and Cody's victory since Roman is going for it and the winner had to go through him. But Roman doesn't lose his titles and his streak stays intact. I think it's possible to lay out a finals match that could take fans on a ride and make it look as though Roman is going to win. I'm not advocating for this necessarily, but would love to hear your thoughts. Could you see WWE doing this as a way to have their cake and eat it too? Which, by the way, that saying drives me nuts. It should be they want to eat their cake and still have it. It's not as catchy, but everybody has their cake before they eat it. So I have it, and now I eat it. It's sequential. So it should be people want to eat their cake and have it too. Reverse those two. There's a whole history to that phrase, and I looked it up years ago. And I remember, it's proof is in the pudding. It's like that saying's been screwed up by people over the years. There's all kinds of cliches that just have lost their meaning. It's as bad as the referee stopping his third count, I tell you. But I just – props to Dave in Boston. I just got to say, you called it. I mean, not – other people have been speculating about that, but to write that 12 minutes before SmackDown begins, that is awesome. Anything more you want to add, Brandon?
I don't know if you go that direction, how do you frame the Cody promo? Like, how do you frame Cody's celebration of winning the title? Like, does he just want to be a world champion under the banner of WWE? Is that all he cares about? Does he not care about the lineage of the specific WWE championship? Is that all that matters? Like, I just think they're putting Cody in a really tough position and almost forcing his hand to kind of do the Codyverse stuff because, like, unless they want to somehow unify the titles again. I mean, if Cody wins this Raw championship that has no history and has no legacy, to me, in order to, for his character to maintain credibility, he has to still want the other title.
Yeah.
And I don't think you want to present that either, because then the new championship is again playing second fiddle.
If Seth Rollins wins and says, let's not talk how long I'm champion, let's talk how many people I face, how I win, and how often I defend the title. That's how we're going to define this title reign, people. Roman Reigns can brag about 1,000 days. You know what I'm going to do? In my first 300 days, I'm going to have more title defenses than he did in 1,000. And you know what? I'm not going to have anyone cheat to help me win. And I'm going to face a wider variety of opponents. I mean, like, just go out there and just bury Roman. Just do what you would say if you were on a debate team in college or high school and you wanted to, you know, make the best points possible. There's a way for Seth to make that title credible, but they got to lean in hard on what Triple H set up. You know, he put the ball on the tee. Let Seth swing and hit it. It's not how long you hold the belt. It's how you win and how often you defend it and against the quality of opposition. And get ready for a ride, because I'm going to define this era. That's it's simple. It's logical. It frames the heel in a way where now the heel's got to step up and the spotlight's shining on all those things as it should. Triple H already, you know, shined a flashlight on it. And I'll shine a spotlight on it by having Seth talk about it. That to me is just the path of least resistance. And the title will have credibility because it's something you do and how the champion acts instead of lineage and angles and interference and hocus pocus with Roman being involved.
Yeah. Can Seth add an addendum to his quest to bring, you know, prestige and honor to the title by saying that he's going to permanently give up cackling?
Well, that's like, I would be for that, but I mean, I don't think he's humanly capable of it. I mean, that's part of his, that's just who he is. But at the same time, that, I mean, I'm with you, but crowds seem to love it. I mean, it's not just his outfit they love. They love a ha ha ha. So, but I would be okay with that. I'd like to see a Seth Rollins baby face minus the cackle.
I mean, I can do with the theme, the singing, the weird outfits. I mean, all of it. The funny thing is like I've always been a big fan of Seth, and there's a lot of like my other passion is music, and a lot of the bands that I love overlap with Seth Rollins, and we run in a lot of the same circles, and Seth is very close friends with my favorite band, and they're one of his favorites as well. And I know the way that they talk about him and the way that he comes off. And he's not the overbearing, annoying, cackling guy. Like, he has a lot more in him, and I just want to see it.
Yeah. All right, Brent, anything else from SmackDown you want to bring up?
No. I think we covered pretty much everything.
Yeah, I mean, the Street Profits won in 3 minutes against Poor Imperium, but that's you know, the new guys on the brand deal.
Made sense. Yeah. The Street Profits were over, though. Man, I mean, everyone was, but they got a really great reaction.
I so wish Austin Theory was on the show so I could just tell Todd, what's going over Austin Theory is. Crazy. He's a superstar. Everybody, I bet everybody wanted to be on the show. Because Bianca Belair got this great reaction. I didn't think Bianca's promo was very good.
Yeah, it wasn't anything, certainly wasn't anything special. I was reminded of the fact that we're going to get Bayley cheesing on Michael Cole every week again, which, I mean, could,
oh, that's right. Yeah, yeah.
Could be fun, could be annoying, depends on how hard they lean into it. Because I think, like, since the last time Bayley and Cole were on the same show, I think that the crowd has found a new reverence for Michael Cole.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
It's definitely going to be a little different.
Yes, it is. It happens, you know, Gorilla Monsoon. Well, there's a generation who thought he was awful, and then there's another generation who were single-digit age or, you know, a little beyond that, who had fond memories, and then they loved him forever. You know, Cole. I mean, but Cole's really good. I mean, people are catching up to the fact that Cole is really, really good at what he does. And, you know, he was, you know, obviously Jim Ross was at his peak when Cole showed up, and Cole had frosted tips and, you know, and did the heel gimmick and got all muscled up and had no neck for a while. And wore a baseball cap backwards and like out in public. And I mean, there's all kinds of reasons, just, you know, give him a hard time, but man, he's, and you know, and then he's produced by Vince McMahon. So some of that stuff, you know, he just gets saddled with, but he's really good at what he does.
I think that had a lot to do with it too. I think the Vince stepping away allowed Cole to be himself a little bit more. And then, he acknowledges it openly. I mean, Pat McAfee, I think, deserves credit for people kind of getting behind Cole in a particular way, because I don't think the enthusiasm was quite at the level that we've seen in the last couple of years from Michael Cole. That started really when McAfee joined him. I mean, they just had such great chemistry, and Cole just so very clearly likes working with him. And even in McAfee's absence, it's like the passion that McAfee reignited in Cole has stayed.
Yeah. Yep. I agree. All right. Very good. Brandon, thanks so much. Been a blast.
Yeah, definitely. It was certainly fun. Looking forward to covering Backlash tomorrow.
Yeah, it's going to be, the crowd will keep us energized, and that's fun. All right. Thanks to our callers. Thanks to our listeners. And thanks to everybody who downloaded or streamed the show. And we'll talk to you all next time.